Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back, and thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez here with Brent Labrada and a very special guest that we'll announce in a second. But first, we wanted to give some shout-outs to people who have been showing us love online. Thank you so much to Colorado Canine Crew, Between the Trees Dog Training, Joyful Dog Service, Dog Training by Maddie, and Central Bark Bay, Central Bark B. Jade, thank you so much. We love you guys. We appreciate you guys. And with that, over to you, man.
What's up, everybody? Good morning. It is 8 a.m. out here Pacific time, and we have the privilege of interviewing someone on the East Coast. He had us on his podcast just a few weeks ago, and we are so happy to have him back on so that we can ask him some questions. We can't wait to get into that and get to know a little bit more about his story and get his opinions on the dog training universe that we all live in. Without further ado, we'd like to introduce you guys to David, the dog trainer. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How are you
cool.
guys?
Doing great, man. It's a beautiful morning. I woke up today at 6:30. I let the dogs out. I'm going to go have my omelet like I always have every morning and back here.
I think one of the sole reasons why I'm a facility guy as opposed to like a do dog training in my house guy is because I just am not a morning person. Like back when I used to have to get up and like grind it out at like 6:30 in the morning running all the dogs and stuff. No thanks. That was just way too much.
No, for sure. Well, I was just letting out my dogs
for that sole purpose.
Yeah, no, I was letting out my dogs, but even that, yeah. I have staff that takes care of them when I'm gone, my own personal dogs. But yeah, no, that kennel life, living at the house, taking the dogs out, you know, you have 15 boarding dogs, training dogs, and you're rotating, cleaning up shit. Like that could be its own podcast in and of itself.
Yeah,
it's the best.
It's the best. It's fantastic. It's great. Well, anyways, man, well, we appreciate you jumping back on, and we really, really enjoyed that interview that you did with us, and it was really, really fun to chat on your platform, and we got so much cool feedback, like the amount of people that said, hey, we just saw you on David the Dog Trainer's podcast, and it was really cool to get some love from people who've never heard of us, which was awesome, so we really, really appreciate that cross-pollination. So we would love to dive into your story and get to know a little bit about you and get to see, get to just know who you are. So let's go ahead and start from the beginning.
My name is David Turpak. I own and operate Miracle Canine Training here in the greater Cleveland area. We are a training, boarding, daycare kennel. We offer training as our first and foremost service. We primarily do behavioral modification, work with more difficult dogs, stuff like that. And then we have boarding and daycare as cool little kind of add-on services that are client exclusive once you've done training with us. We're able to kind of create a nice little community for everybody. In addition to that, I'm the host of the David the Dog Trainer podcast. Obviously, you guys were on. We've been doing that for about 2.5 years, about 135 episodes in or so. So that's a cool little unique additional thing we do past our training that helps us reach out to a little broader of a group of people and obviously be able to speak directly to the clients and continue to push as much kind of information into them as possible so that even long past their training service, they could still stay connected with us and stay up to date on, just little reminders of good habits to get into or things to maintain, or if they start slipping with something, there's plenty of ways for them to keep in touch with us. So that's what we do here in the Cleveland area. Never was a dog person growing up, never had dogs, no family dogs, anything like that. Didn't really know a whole lot of people that had dogs. And as I got older and got into my late teen years, started kind of getting a little interested in the idea of dogs. Some of the people I were hanging out with at the time were very into dogs and kind of just sparked the idea of this could be a cool thing to do, right? So got my first dog. Didn't know anything about them, figured I should learn how to train this thing because my only association with dogs up until that point was the handful of friends I had that had dogs that would basically just bark at me or jump all over me and stuff when I would come over the house. And it was just basically just a nuisance, and I knew I didn't want that to be the case. So I started working with a bunch of different local trainers, all different walks of life, right? So basically kind of the old kind of Keeler style, but a little bit more gentle, like Starmark Keeler style approach to training is what I got into first, moved into a little bit more of a force-free route, and then ultimately wound up working with a trainer that followed pretty closely the Michael Ellis system of dog training and ultimately wound up working for that guy, which kind of kick-started my dog training journey. So it's been a wild ride. Obviously got into starting my own company and basically have owned a dog training company now for about eight and a half years or so. So pretty cool.
That's Heck awesome. Yeah, man. What was it specifically when, you know, because I was supposed to go to film school and then I scrapped all of that to do dog training. What was it about dog training that drew you in that you're like, I think I'm going to do this?
That's a good question. I don't know if it was dog training specifically, right? So when I got my first dog, I was really, really involved in the music scene. I was performing in a band that was doing some touring, kind of regional touring across some of the local states. And I really thought that was going to be like my golden ticket, right? Mm-hmm. And as the band, things with that kind of started falling apart, I had this dog and I was doing this training with her. And because I have a very obsessive personality, I feel like it just kind of went zoop, right? Mm-hmm. And that was just, you know, right place, right time, what wound up getting all of my attention. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's a really interesting thing about like going from never having animals before and understanding that connection you could have with one to now I'm taking every spare minute of my time and devoting it to working with this thing. You know what I mean? And you know, the relationship and the bond and going and doing stuff with her and all that, it was really cool, you know, and it was a ton of fun. And especially, I feel like I always say, I think I got really, really lucky by my big break into dog training was through something like the Michael Ellis system of dog training, because that's about as fun of a approach as you could take to it. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like sky's the limit as far as how much you could learn, where the reason why I bounced from trainer to trainer, I think I worked with 3 or 4 different trainers ultimately, was because I felt like each one up until that point, I was kind of capping out with how much I could learn. Right. So once I found that, it's just like there was no stopping. Right. It just kind of kept climbing and kept climbing. And the things I was able to do and the things I was learning about just kept growing from there. So I think that's what really kind of caught my attention is how vast it was. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about some of your either mentors or some of the people that you've looked up to in terms of business, because I know that running a business and being a dog trainer can feel like two very different things, but you managed to do both well.
Yeah, I think early on in the training, when I first started working for a training company, my sole kind of guide was learning about the training side of things, right? So I really wanted to kind of master that. And at that point, even I had no intentions of ever like starting a company. I've never been like the entrepreneurial kid that was out hustling shit or selling stuff or anything like that. That was never me. Frankly, I thought I was just going to work a job and kind of climb the ladder for the rest of my life. And even when I first started working for this guy, I was like, oh, this could be a cool thing I could do for a while. And I remember even like my first like 6 months into it, I was like, oh, well, if this doesn't work out, I can go work for Joe Schmo Trainer. I think my North Star was ultimately like, oh, I could go work for Michael Ellis, or I could go work for this person or work for that person. You know what I mean? So that was my sole intention. There was no growth as far as, you know, me learning about business and stuff. And as I was doing that, just the place I was working at, the owner of the company started kind of going through some kind of rough times, which got him to be very distant from things. And we kind of unintentionally had the company pushed on us, where we were forced to kind of learn how to not just train, but kind of run this business, you know? And that's what ultimately led to me starting my first company. And even then, I started my first company with a business partner, and it wasn't even my idea. It was basically his idea of like, oh, okay, cool. Well, this isn't working, this thing we're doing right now. And, you know, we could either go and work somewhere else or get different jobs or do training on the side or something like that, or we could start a business, right? And he had kind of presented that idea from the lens of, this could be a cool route to do. You know, there's all these services that need to be rendered out still within the walls of this company we're working for. And we could probably work out a deal with the owner at the time, where basically, hey, sign over the lease of the building to us. There was recurring clients already from the standpoint of boarding business, daycare business, training packages that were already paid for in full that needed to be rendered out. And, you know, sign over the building to us. We'll fulfill all of those services. You keep whatever cash is currently within the company, and we kind of part ways nice and easy here. And that's ultimately what happened, you know. And even that, so we started that company in January of 2015. I started Miracle in January of 2019. So you look at 4 years with that company. Even I was kind of disconnected from the business side of things, right? So he kind of ran a lot of those types of things. I still focused on building the training platform, building kind of the name for ourselves, all of those types of things. I was kind of the face of the company, if you will. And as I started hitting a point where I realized it wasn't really working out there either, and I was going to need to, if I wanted to have the full control and the flexibility that I wanted with things, I was going to need to kind of branch off on my own. That's when I would say I really started learning about the business side of things. And at that point, you know, I had already gotten really good mentors in the industry with like Tyler Mudo, guys like that, you know, who also operated dog training facilities. Blake Rodriguez, he was a guy that was operating a facility at the time that I did a phone consult with early on in my training career. And I kind of just started asking questions of more of the business side of things. And, you know, it's funny, you guys do your podcast from the lens of helping new trainers, right? In a lot of cases. And I think I mentioned in the last time we tried to film this, you guys did that episode where you're talking about like contracts and like the legal side of things of starting a business. Like those were all things I didn't know going into the company. And unfortunately, right, I had to make a lot of mistakes from that lens in order to learn how important some of those things were. And, you know, luckily none of those were super detrimental mistakes. But now from my lens and from your lens, right, we're now trying to help the next generation of trainers that are coming up avoid some of those things. So,
right.
Totally. I love that because, you know, well, we talked to a lot of dog trainers and there, we always see this kind of, you know, I didn't choose the game chose me kind of.
100%.
And it is what it is. It's every single time. I think one thing that I've noticed is a lot of people who might have skills from other things, you know, maybe we were good at other things or we excelled in other things, we're able to bring those talents into dog training. And I think it was Tyler Mudo who said this. He said, the day that dog training stops being stimulating to me is the day I'll quit. Yeah. He goes, but I don't think that's going to happen. You know, and I feel that 100%.
Well, and I think he's a good example of, and I kind of preach this a lot myself, like when you're in the position of being a business owner, right, and you're in the position of being a dog training business owner, right, there's so many different areas you could shift your attention onto as you get bored with other ones. But I think a trap a lot of trainers fall into, even some of these big name guys that you see out there, is they're the trainer and the business owner, right? A lot of times, they might have a couple, you know, employees that help with miscellaneous, you know, kennel skills and stuff like that. But like ultimately, if they're not there, the training isn't really getting done, at least not to the caliber that they want it to get done at, right?
Right.
So I knew really, really early on that I didn't want to, because I had, you know, early on in things when we kind of had the business dumped on us, then we started our first company, like I was the only trainer, right? And I realized that how stressful that was and how much work that was if I wanted to help as many people that I ultimately wanted to. So we started getting employees, we started hiring trainers, obviously. And, you know, as we've gone through the years, like at this point, we have an unbelievably competent training team where, you know, I could be on vacation, like I'm going to be in 3 weeks, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks on vacation and our business is going to operate, right? It's going to, we're still going to be fully booked. It's not like we're taking less clients because I'm going to be gone or anything like that. And because it's at that place where I'm kind of working on the business, not within the business with a lot of things, I'm able to focus on different things to keep that interest sparked, to keep that interest up. So, you know, I, in the last year or so, was really, really getting into like the dog socialization side of things, right? Where it wasn't even, it wasn't like training commands and stuff that was exciting me anymore. That was kind of starting to get a little bit boring with stuff, but it was teaching dogs how to interact with other dogs. That was really, really exciting to me. So in my free time, that's what I did, right? I would help the staff with that side of things and I would experiment and learn more about that side of things, right? In other cases, sometimes you like, I went through a phase then where I wanted to learn about like sales, right? I've never been a sales guy, right? I never worked a sales job or anything like that. So I wanted to figure out a way to better streamline the sales process and learn some of those types of tactics and stuff like that. So I was able to shift my attention into that. And I could constantly do that and never really get bored with it because there's an infinite amount of different things that I could work on. So that's how I try to look at it. You know, and I think Tyler's even doing that too, where, you know, he sold his facility, obviously. Like he doesn't have a facility anymore, but he's still able to keep that spark going by creating courses, right? And now he's starting his podcast and he likes educating trainers and he's still within the dog world, just it's in different forms, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He's evolved. He has such an expertise. It's evolving, right?
Yeah.
And kind of what you said, actually, when we interviewed Tyler, when we were doing our road dogs, video interview series that we were doing, he said something along the, because I had mentioned to him, I said, you know, like when you own a business, you're so busy operating the business and trying to run the business that you stop learning dog training, right? Yeah. Like you kind of get stuck in this place where, you know, A, I'm trying to systemize and standardize things for my dog trainer so that they understand like how to do, you know, 80% of what our services are. And it gets to this point where it feels like you stop learning. And he just said, and he says kind of what you said. He said, he's like, well, you never stop learning. You start learning different things.
Yep.
Right. But I remember to your point, like it gets to this point where everything's kind of running itself. And then you can go back to being a student, right? And you can go back to practicing concepts or revisiting concepts or trying to master a different avenue of the dog training space. Yeah. And that's kind of like a cool little dance. It's like you have to sacrifice the deep practice with dogs sometimes to help build a team. And then once you've built that team, you can go back into the deep practice with dogs.
And so, I think... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the deep practice that you get back into, like the cool thing is like all my trainers are very competent, right? They're independent workers. They, in many, many of the cases, like 95% of the cases, like I don't ever have to interact with the clients or step in on any of them or anything like that. But now what happens is when we get those really extreme cases, and I'm not even talking about super dangerous dogs or anything like that, but just ones where it's like, this isn't fitting into the box we're trying to get it to fit into kind of thing. And we've tried troubleshooting, we've tried all these different things, and something's just not clicking. Those are the cases that I kind of get called in on now at this point. So the majority of the work that I'm doing from a training standpoint is like serious troubleshooting and problem solving with stuff, which I've found has then challenged me even more. And again, that's kind of the stuff that gets me really excited now at this point, is helping to get past those last really, really big hurdles that people might experience, you know? So, you know, you don't get as much of the mundane, like, again, teaching. Like, I remember when I would do, like, 7-8 lessons in a day, and, you know, every single one of them would just be like, okay, we're teaching a bed stay, right? Like, for 8 hours straight, I'm just going through the motions of teaching a bed stay. Yep. And because the systems and stuff are so kind of concrete at this point, it's like, every single one goes exactly the same way, right? Yep. Very rarely does it stray off course or anything like that. And it just, it gets a little mundane with stuff. Yeah. So and everything's just, so just, different. There's so much variety now, I feel like.
And when you do that, well, going back to like teaching the same lesson multiple times a day, it's like, and just for your own entertainment, you try to say it different every single time.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
you try to come up with 10 different ways of being like, this is how we're going to teach plays today.
Yeah. But 100%.
No, that's super true. Well, that's really, do you have any questions, Mariano? About that?
Well, I wanted to comment on the fact that you started a podcast a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because I agree with Brent's, you know, kind of analogy of, or Tyler's analogy too, of like, you can be a teacher teaching your team and building your business. And once you've gotten that to a point, then you become a student again. And that dance to me is teacher, student, back and forth, right? And you started your podcast, I remember when we had first spoken, more for clients than us. Like, we started a podcast for newer trainers, right?
Yep.
And you made that distinction of like, well, my clients listen to it all the time too. This is actually how I find a lot of business, and this is kind of long-term support. So I wanted to get your thoughts on what motivated you to start it. Is that what it was going to be from the beginning, or did it evolve into that?
Yeah, good question, right? So it's not even necessarily that it was for the clients. It was more for just the general dog owner. You know what I mean? And obviously our clients fall into that category for sure. But I think to the general dog owner, a lot of podcasts that I see out there, especially in the dog world, are either for trainers, right? Whether new trainers or more established trainers or whatever it may be, or they're podcasts that are just like way too like intellectualized that the dog owner, your average dog owner, just doesn't really give a shit about it, right? And I'm not like this fancy, super, you know, we can debate like well-spoken or this or that, but like I feel like I like just connecting with people and sharing stories and putting them out there in a way that isn't intended to make me sound really smart. They're just intended to share experiences as I'm navigating this dog world. And because I see so many people having a hard time navigating the dog world, I felt that it was kind of my duty and obligation to help kind of help navigate through some of that stuff for people, right? So, you know, whether it's early on with things when we were, you know, I think our first handful of podcasts were like reviewing books, right? Like we did the Jocko Willink thing. At the time, I was really into like Jocko's podcast, and he would do that. Like he would read books and then freaking talk about them, right? So I would get together like, you know, a couple of my trainers and Josh and stuff, and we'd sit here. I mean, there's four mics. We rarely ever have four people in this room anymore, but we would have four people here, and I'd read fucking, you know, Caesar's Way or some shit, and we would talk about things we like and don't like about it, right? And you know, that kind of evolved to me making it more of like a Q&A style podcast, where like we would just compile questions we would get on Instagram, because any of us that are putting a lot of content out there get probably at least one or two questions per day DM to them, right?
Right.
And then it would turn into, you know, we did some interviewing guests where it was like connecting with people, and then we got our freaking TV and, you know, watched it, you know, same thing we did with the books, just watching videos that were on YouTube and stuff like that. And it just kind of organically grew, and I tried to never fit it into like this box of like, it has to be this. It was always just, we're just getting together once a week and we're just talking about dog stuff, right? And that was kind of the intent of it. And like I said, like, for the first handful of episodes, like probably 20, 25 episodes or so, first half year of us doing it, it was a slow, steady grind of we'd get, you know, 20 downloads per episode, 25 mm-hmm. downloads per episode, something like that. And then I started getting a lot of clients that were coming in or clients calling, inquiring about training. And I talked to them and be like, and they would tell me, the first thing they tell me, I've been listening to your podcast for 6 months, right? Or something like that. And that's when it really started clicking with me how important it was for not just putting my opinion out there, but helping to generate business and kind of build right. the trust with the client. I think that's what content is for, is to pre-sell yourself to somebody, right? I talk, you know, I'm getting into sales and understanding that side of things, but I don't like selling to people. I want people to feel very confident in what we do, how we do it, our message, our opinions on things, stuff like that, before they ever even step in our door, because it just makes our job easier than in the end. And the podcast helps me to be able to do that.
Sure. And something that I want to get into is this interesting state that we kind of find ourselves in right now, just as a dog culture overall, as trainers, as like social media influencers. And your take makes total sense to me. Like, social media should be to kind of pre-sell yourself to a client so that you can ultimately be of service to them.
Yeah. Right?
Before you meet them, after you meet them. But I'd like to get your thoughts on some of the other prominent, like, social media people out there right now that are in the dog training world.
You ask that one more time. Sorry.
Talk to me about some other big social media dog training, you know, like platforms that you see out there. What's good? What's bad? Like is, you know, where is dog culture right now? And is social media kind of influencing that?
Yes. Okay. So I'm not going to, I mean, we could get into specific platforms and stuff like that, but I'm going to give you kind of the broad answer of what I think you're kind of looking for with that, which is, I think we all, as we get bigger and bigger platforms, teeter this line, right? And I think what the line is putting your opinion out there on stuff, right? And, you know, you could use other platforms, or we talk, you know, reading a book and talking about things you agree and disagree on, or watching a video and talking about things you agree or disagree on. And we do all of that just to help further validate our opinions to people, right? So that our clients that are watching can understand why, if, you know, whatever, Shield Canine does things one particular way and we don't do it that particular way, why we don't do it that particular way, and trying to do so without like making it seem like they're a bad person or they're doing anything inherently super terrible, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just not, it's not us, right? That's something I wouldn't do because A, B, C, or D, and it doesn't fit into my program because of A, B, C, or D, right? Mm-hmm. I think we teeter the line of doing that, especially with social media, and hitting a point where we're inherently making it seem like what the other person is doing is actually bad, right? And I mm-hmm, think that's mm-hmm. we're all guilty of it to some extent, of like pushing further in one direction than the other. Like some of my early reaction videos that I did, you know, I can look back on and be like, I was probably a little harsher than I needed to be. Or in the heat of the moment when we're having fun talking about a video and stuff, you get a little more fired up than you intend to be, right? But mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. it's actually ironic. We just did a podcast yesterday or the day before, where we were talking about, in the state of dog training right now, where everybody is borderline just attacking everybody over, frankly, mm-hmm. opinions, in my opinion, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I think it's very important to still make it be known. None mm-hmm. of our critiques or criticisms or anything like that are ever coming from this place of me thinking you are a bad person. You know what I mean?
Right.
We could debate opinions and we could debate methods and stuff like that. But in the end of the day, as long as you're helping somebody, that's all that I really care about. And I think that the line that we're sitting on with this is that a lot of people, especially with bigger platforms, are not making that clear enough, which is creating a lot of toxicity in the dog world currently. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess I'd love to hear a little bit more about, some aren't making that line clear enough. Like, help me understand what you mean by that. What are they doing, or what are they not doing?
Well, I mean, so you could look at really blatant, clear examples of, you know, I don't want to keep rapping on the Zach George Dog Daddy debacle, right? But like, things mm-hmm. are hitting a point where people are, you know, basically weaponizing followers to go and protest things and leave one-star reviews on platforms. Or it could be stuff like I've been really vocal in the past about characters like, say, like Larry Crone, how I think that he gets a little too extreme sometimes with making it like, you know, some of these people that are balanced trainers that might be a little bit more heavy-handed with dogs or quicker to jump to corrections and stuff are, quote-unquote, like, destroying dogs and, you know, everything they're doing is terrible and you need to totally stay away from them and things like that. I think there's a lot of that kind of stuff that I see in the dog world of it crosses the line of not just I disagree with this person, and it starts going to a point of, like, this person is actually doing really serious harm in the dog training that they're doing.
It villainizes people really easily. Well, and I can see that, especially if it comes from people with big, higher status, if you will, right, in the dog training field, right? I heard this interesting thing that I think could also play a part into the dog training culture. It said, when two intelligent people disagree, it's because they think the other one's crazy. It's because they have differentiating base beliefs. Right. And so you can have two really, really smart people that have no problem rationalizing and making sense of the world. But what happens is all of that gets connected to whatever their base belief is. Right. So if you believe that, you know, dogs are, you know, helpless and are to be protected, and like that is the core base belief that you have, then a lot of your rationality and logic is going to be rooted into that base belief. If you believe, you know, that dogs are domesticated utility animals, then that's going to come down to your base belief and how you treat them. So what do you think about that statement? Because I think there are a lot of intelligent people online, but they all have different base beliefs. And I think that's why sometimes it's hard for us to see each other's side.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you, the kind of base belief, I feel like that a lot of trainers will kind of teeter on is, you know, this idea that we're either really dog-centric with everything we do or really people-centric. And I know a lot of bigger trainers, like, don't like that comparison because they're like, well, why can't we be both, right? But in the end of the day, what I commonly see people talking about is either looking at things from the lens of we only care about, you know, the dog's emotions and feelings with things, or we only care about the human's emotions and feelings with things, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess that would kind of equate to base beliefs of where you start with stuff, and then you build your kind of message and your training approach and stuff around that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great distinction and differentiation, I believe. What about you, Mariano?
Well, you know, I understand that. I tend to be one of those to look at it as a combination of both, but I don't in my mind it's not like 50% this, 50% that. It's sure.
It's because we're Libras. Teaching. It's easy for us to be right in the middle.
Well, no, what I'm saying is I don't look at it in my mind as I'm going to give half of my attention to how the dog feels and half of my attention to how the person feels. I look at it as these people are ultimately raising and guiding these dogs through their life, their parents, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. Not to be like the fur baby thing, but that's you're raising this dog. You're responsible for this dog. You're a parent. And the best way to influence the child is going to be by influencing the decision-making of the parents. But that being said, there's tons of advice out there that completely negates the feelings of the parent, of the child, rather. Right? Sure. Like, oh, no, just you know what's best and just go for it. So yeah. I think that there does have to be a consideration of both. But in my mind, that like the initial objective is get in with the parents and then teach them how to read and respond to what they're reading from the dog.
Yeah.
You know, and I also think Michael Ellis made this point a couple times ago that we went to Santa Rosa and saw him. He made this really excellent point. A lot of dog training today, especially online, is so focused on, let me show you how to teach your dog things. Let me show you how to get your dog to listen to you, right? Let me show you how to influence your dog's decision-making, where the really, really good dog trainers, Michael Ellis and Ivan, you know, all these people, and all the really, all the really in-tuned emotionally dog trainers, like, you know, who listen to the dog back, one thing that they get, you know, really well is, you have to learn when to tell your dog stuff, and you also have to learn when to listen when they're telling you stuff.
Yeah.
Right? If they're uncomfortable, be willing to read the signs, right? If this is too much for them, be willing to back off and so on.
I totally agree. And I think that, you know, getting into a lot of debate people see when they talk about, you know, certain things might not address like the underlying cause of, you know, like punishing a dog for jumping or reacting or whatever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't address the underlying cause of while they're reacting, where you do get into then the conversation of like, well, can't two things be the same at once, right?
Yeah,
can't we stop a problematic behavior? Yeah, exactly, right? Can't we stop a problematic behavior like reactivity, but also understand the dog is reacting because dogs are constantly coming into their space while they're out on walks and people are bombarding them. And the way we're interacting with them is done in a way that's like really intrusive and just not respectful of their personal space and stuff. And can't we like teach a boundary, but also address the underlying cause and kind of get the best of both worlds? And this is where you get to like the dog centric and human centric side of things. I think people like to categorize certain things into one or the other, like again, something like correcting a dog, right?
Yeah.
There are so many people that I work with that, you know, if their dog would just stop freaking jumping all over their guests every time they came over their house, the human's life and the dog's life would be 10,000 times better, because all the toxicity and resentfulness and stuff that the human has towards a dog because of their behavior is resulting in them having a bad relationship with that dog to begin with, and the dog not being able to enjoy all the perks of people coming over without a ton of frustration. And if we just corrected them instead of taking a really long approach of trying to, you know, manage the situation and keep the stress levels down and keep the arousal levels down and all those types of things, if we could just correct it and stop it, maybe in that moment we're looking at it from the human lens of like my stress is important and I need this to stop right now. But as soon as we stop that, then it's very dog centric of their life is just so much better. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And there's this,
go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And there's this really wonderful irony that people, they get nervous to correct the dog for jumping because they're trying to like, let their dog be a dog and they're trying to do all these things. Right. And they're a lot of people are of the mind of like, corrections don't make sense for dogs. This is something that you as a person, you basically value yourself above this dog. And they look at it as like, I'm not going to overpersonal, like persona. What's the word? Sorry. I'm not going to put my human emotions on this dog.
Anthropomorphize.
Anthropomorphize. Sorry.
Did you have coffee?
That's way too big of a word for me.
Once I finish my coffee, then I'll be
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, you haven't had your coffee yet.
So the irony is people are afraid to anthropomorphize. So they don't correct because corrections like, you know, punishments and accountability, that's a human thing, right? That's why we have laws and whatever. But ironically, at the exact same time, they also like resent and they also get like annoyed and they have all these human emotions toward this dog that is just innocently like, oh, people are here. I'm going to jump now. And and people get so frustrated and they almost have like beef with their dog. Like, God, I tell them not to jump.
Well, I think there's a dissidence there because it's like kind of like just talking about the paradigm you guys just outlined. It's like we can have a human centric dog trainer with a dog centric owner.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's this confusion, right? There's kind of this incongruency there that creates like you're trying to be like, I'm trying to help you. And then that owner's like, but all I care about is the dog. I don't care about myself. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, but I care about you.
Isn't this the interesting conversation of this though, where it's like, then you get back to talking about, you know, okay, all these dog trainers that are out there that have these big platforms. I also think a lot of them get a little too hung up sometimes on just the method, right? You know, one is like, oh, well, you need to be teaching things in this more gentle manner, right? And you should never jump right to corrections because it's bad and, and, you know, but we'll correct later, but you should be doing it in this order. And the other is like, no, jump right to the corrections because you need to be able to stop it because all owners' lives would be better if we just stopped the jumping right now. And then the force-free approach is like, well, you know, we could just manage things. And everybody's shouting these different opinions without realizing that every single day we work with, you know, in our case, we have probably, from a training standpoint, 12 to 15 clients in the facility per day that are looking for help. And when you really break that down, that's 12 to 15 different types of relationships between dog and owner that we have to deal with and be able to individually assess. Yes, your method is probably going to be really aligned with what this person wants. And your method is probably going to be really aligned with what this person wants. And getting back to your initial question of what did I want to do with the podcast, I wanted to make it known that there are a million different ways you could do this and how nuanced some of this stuff actually is. Like when I look at a client, this person's needs is going to be way different than this person's needs. And this person's wants are going to be way different than this person's wants, right? And I just don't think there's enough talk of like, your approach is good sometimes. Your approach is good sometimes. Your approach is good sometimes. It's just so dependent on the situation and all the variables at play.
There's a word that was taught to us by our friend Forrest Mickey, and it's called equifinality. And equifinality means there are multiple ways to get to the same result or same sure. destination, right? There are many roads to Rome. And that was the metaphor that he was explaining to us. And we talked about this, I think, on your podcast, where we were just talking a little bit about, like, it's really silly for us to compare and contrast methods or tools because they belong to certain systems.
Yeah.
And it's really silly. It's like, it would be like me taking, ripping out a page of Harry Potter and ripping out a page of Lord of the Rings and then trying to see which book is better based on that single page that I ripped out, you know? And I think we do that a lot too much with dog training techniques and dog training tools, because within every system, there are going to be principles that kind of, that run that system, right? So whether it's negative reinforcement, positive reinforcement, there's contingency plans for when things go wrong within each system, like how to correct, or they're very self-aware of what could go wrong. So, and then they have corrections for them within the system. Yep. So I think without knowing the entirety of a system, I think it's so easy for an individual to just judge the other person because they don't understand the system, right? So instead of saying, like, your system is bad, I really think it's important for us to try to understand the system and then make judgment calls once we see the system from beginning to end.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would for sure agree with that.
Nice.
I want to get your thoughts on something that we kind of touched on as well when you hadn't had us on your show, which was people focusing too much on the systems and the methods when they should be focusing on outcomes. Mm-hmm. You strike me as the kind of person, based on your context, I've been watching your podcast for a while. So I guess talk a little bit about, like, the importance of focusing on outcomes, on if you help the dog, if you help the client, what does it really matter necessarily what the system is?
100%, right? And it's, I would say, under 99% of circumstances, my question is the dog's life and the owner's life better, right? Mm-hmm. And as long as it is, generally speaking, I'm very, very happy with that. Obviously, we could have the debate of, like, do the ends justify the means in all situations? I think somebody messaged me one time in the last, like, month or so regarding a podcast we made, and they were basically asking, do you think that anything is acceptable under any circumstance as long as it gets the result that you're looking for in the end? To which I can't answer yes to that, honestly, because there's, it's a trap question, because it's like, well, you know, like, there's a million different things. Like, well, yeah, if I stab the dog 3 times in the side to get him to stop trying to attack the other dog out on the walk, and then I quickly brought a sew kit and sewed up the wounds and medically healed it so that the dog recovered perfectly fine from it, and the dog never does it again, is that okay? It's like, no, that's ridiculous, obviously, right? but under most circumstances, with 99.9% of training systems out there, like, they're around because they're working to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whether mm-hmm. it's the most extreme of, like, you know, the purely positive Zach George system of freaking dog training, he's got his courses and stuff out there. I'm sure those courses have helped people. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there's people that have walked away from that course saying, I learned a lot of stuff and I have a better life with my dog because of it. And I'm so happy for them in that situation. And I'm sure we could say the same thing about people that literally only teach things with negative reinforcement and positive punishment. There's no positive reinforcement or anything like that, right? And mm-hmm. they could walk away from those systems and say, my life is better with my dog and my dog has more freedom and has a better life because of it. And again, same deal. I'm so happy for them in that situation. I think, getting back to the original thing, I think it's the vilification of stuff that mm-hmm. really bothers me, because the people that are vilifying those things know, without a question of a doubt, that they are still helping people to some extent, right? Mm-hmm. And what the hell was I going to say? Results are everything, right? I think I shared a story the last time we tried to film this, of around the same time we were filming it, I think I had just finished up working with a client that did a board train that had a super anxious dog, right? And this dog, positive reinforcement was kind of out of the question. I'm sure it wasn't, like, listen, if I had, you know, 8 weeks with the dog or 10 weeks with the dog or something, I'm sure I could have made it a little bit more positive for him and this and that. But predominantly, we taught everything with negative reinforcement, right? And then we moved to accountability mm-hmm. with it. And the dog is just, the guy wrote us this raving review last week, just basically like with pictures of this dog off leash at the creek, like having the time of his life. He's never able to take the dog swimming before, at least not off leash, right? And this dog is living this fantastic life. Their bond is so much better. All these headache points they were having, even including the dog getting into like squabbles with one of the other dogs in the house and stuff like that, like all of it was like good, right? And are they totally in the clear? No, there's still work to be done, right? There's always work to be done with that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But my problem is that a lot of these people that are so vocal against certain methods, if they were to look at this dog, right, and without any context of what the owner were to say or anything, and just kind of, you know, see the training approach, and I'm sure the dog wasn't super thrilled about everything during the training approach and all that kind of stuff, they would be like, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. This is the worst training I've ever seen. This guy shouldn't touch dogs, blah, blah, blah. But like, look at the outcome, right? They have such a phenomenal life, right? And if we want to have trainer talk and, like, you know, behind the scenes be like, well, you probably could have done this and got to the same result. You probably could have done this and, you know, built up a little bit more motivation with the dog or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we could do that. And I'm always open to having those types of conversations, obviously. Yeah. But it's like the end result was we have a really happy owner and we have a dog that's enjoying its life way more than it was able to before. And I really try to keep my attention on that.
That's amazing, man. And I want to use that to kind of shepherd us into the next big idea here, which is, where do we see culture heading? Because I think that you made a really strong delineation early on about, you know, people kind of look at it like this or like that, right? Mm-hmm. And now that we find ourselves in this place, this, at least to me, feels like where we are modern day. It's like, oh, well, sure, you got the result, but like at what cost, basically, was the question, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that DM or that message that you got, I think the reason it was unfair was because it was an incomplete question. Like if somebody were to ask me that exact same thing, like, you know, do the ends always justify the means? The real answer is it depends on the end and it depends on the mean. Like, I don't know, right? Is there anything I wouldn't do to, I don't know, stop somebody from murdering my wife? Yeah. Probably, so like it depends on what we're talking about, right?
100%.
So this like this blanket question is like, that's, I don't know, it depends. That's not a real question, right? Like come back to me when you've got some context. But people tend to kind of lack context or purposely miss it or minimize it, you know, and so on. So that to me is where I see stuff going. But I want to get your take on like, where does this take us? Where does this trail lead to?
Yeah, I think if you like look at history, and I used the example last time where I was talking about, you know, dog training is very similar to like U.S. politics, right? I think like you have two ends of the spectrum. You got people that are much more liberal with stuff, much more conservative with things. And as years go on, generally we see like the poles get further and further apart. And I think we see that in dog training as well, where the extremes are getting more and more extreme with things to try to combat each other. And I think there's always like a slingshot where it starts coming back in the middle. So I feel confident that, you know, I feel confident that like the serious stuff that's happening of like, you know, trying to ban certain tools and like, I think Sweden recently like banned crates or something like that.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. I think all these extremes you're seeing in these places, I feel like it can't last forever because we know if it continues heading in that direction, it's going to hit a point where it makes it so freaking impossible to own a dog, even, you know, like there's people in the comment section. We got a TikTok video that's going kind of viral of talking about crating like 8-week-old puppies, right? And these people are like basically saying like, if you have to leave your dog alone ever, you shouldn't own a dog. It's like, okay, well, everybody works, right? And sure, some people might work from home, but it's like everybody works. Like, what if you go out to a restaurant, right? Like, you can't just take your dog to every restaurant that you go to, right? You can't go into every single store. You can't take them into the doctor's office, right? So if we hit a point where legislation goes so far as to making a lot of those things illegal, like you can't confine your dog, right? You can't use training tools with your dog. You can't do anything that causes any sort of stress to your dog, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to first and foremost result in 99% of the dogs out there that we work with are just going to wind up getting euthanized, right? Wind up in shelters and then wind up getting euthanized because you can't home them without some degree of all of those types of things, which will decrease the amount of dogs significantly that people have. And I think there's going to be pushback on it because a lot of these people that might not be vocal about pushing back on these, you know, certain legislation acts and stuff that are kind of going out there are going to realize that they actually do affect them, right? If e-collars get banned, right? Here's the example. I got a golf course right behind my house, right? And during the winter, there's nobody ever there. We go back there with the dogs, and they go freaking tearing through the field. Just have the time of their life, and it's the greatest thing ever, and it's so much fun. And if I could not use an e-collar with my dogs, right, without serious fines, serious ramifications, and it hit a point where it wasn't worth it for me to try to sneak it anymore, I would not feel totally confident doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean they're not well-behaved, but it's like, man, these training tools are my insurance policy, right? I have clients that have dogs.
I wear a seatbelt.
Yeah, that crate their dogs, because before they started crating their dog, I got one in particular I could think of that ate an entire bottle of like Advil or something like that.
Oh,
like
my gosh.
A big bottle of it. And they had to rush the dog to the emergency vet, had to have its stomach pumped, right? And you could say, well, that dog isn't trained well enough. You didn't house train that dog well enough. It's like, okay, right? Like, if you say so, right? Yeah. But like, it's not worth it to me, right? Do you leave knives all over your floor, like with your toddler out? It's like, well, you didn't train your toddler well enough to not pick up knives, right? Like,
yeah, no, 100%. Right. I mean, it's always tricky, because it's like we have close relationships, intimate relationships with like predators, you know what I mean? Like they're all predators, and some have different ranging degrees of misbehavior. And yeah, I think the biggest point is both extremes lead to dog suffering. However, the extreme of banning this and banning that and banning this, it's always leads to death. Like no matter what, it's going to lead to death. It's going to lead to homeless animals. It's going to lead to more neglect, pain, and suffering. And that's why I think, to your point, it's going to come back. You know, it's spreading apart right now, but at some point it will balance itself out. As you were seeing socially, things are kind of balancing itself out little by little. But I want to go ahead and take a quick little commercial break, and we'll come back and we'll jump back onto some of our other topics that we'd love to talk to you about. Thank you so much again for your time. And we'll see you guys just in a couple minutes. See you soon.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be, and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world. Ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com or visit our Instagram page at dogtrainerspodcast. Thank you, guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, again, thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. We're interviewing David Terpak from Miracle Canine, and we've been having such a blast. And we wanted to bring this back with just a brief recap and then a quick segue, right? So we were talking about the current state of affairs where people are so busy spending so much time arguing with each other. All these trainers are debating all the tactics, and they're critiquing other trainers. And there's this interesting, like, big point that's being missed. Like, if you look at it in terms of efficiency, right, the 20% of trainers that are focusing on 80% of the world, which is dog owners, via social media, via online content, they're the ones who are really influencing the understandings and the decision makings of the owners, while all the trainers are bickering and they're kind of left behind, not even realizing. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Okay. So I have like a really, I feel like a good example that kind of like highlights that. So, so how many times do you get a client that comes in and let's say you're doing just using e-collar. I feel like e-collar is the easiest example for this, right?
Sure.
And they're like, I was working on A, B, C, or D, right? And I had my e-collar turned all the way up to a 22, and it still wasn't working, right? Mm. So the reason why I use that example is because, and again, this is one extreme end of the spectrum that I'm using here, but I feel like through a lot of the bickering, and the bickering, you know, we're getting further apart because we're trying to, like, if somebody's trying to make the e-collar seem like a little bit nicer or like make it seem like a little harsher of a tool, we're going to generally take the approach of highlighting, look at these dogs working at 5, look at these dogs working at 10, looking at these dogs working at 15, et cetera, right? And unfortunately, by bickering about it, and you starting to kind of make your message really, really intense towards something like that, what's happening is we're convincing people that if they're needing to use a level over 25 or 23 that they must be doing something wrong. Where all of us know, as dog trainers, all of us have run into the situation where we're out and about on an off-leash hike with our dog and suddenly a deer pops out of nowhere 7 feet away and you have to have it at 100 for that. You got to have it at 70 for that, whatever it may wind up being, right? But because we don't talk about those types of experiences and instead we're trying to fight the opposing side a little bit, we confuse people by not giving them the complete picture of everything. Does that kind of segue into it a little bit?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It does, and I guess I would love to hear some of your fixes. What would be some things that you would do in order to make this content a little bit more relatable or a little bit better?
Highlighting more of the complete picture, right? So talking about, like, even if you want to make it seem like we don't need as many corrections, right? Still talk about the places where we definitely do need to use more firm corrections, right? Or if you're trying to make it seem like, hey, it's okay to use firm corrections, still highlight the places where using firm corrections might be inappropriate, right? And maybe that might be counterintuitive to what it is that you're trying to actually accomplish. And I think we talked about this a little bit in our podcast we did yesterday. The one we just did the other day was really good. Just to plug that real quick, David, the Dog Trainer Podcast, episode 134. but we talked about, we got a question on YouTube from somebody that basically, in a nutshell, said, what is your opinion on people who genuinely feel like balanced dog training made their dog's behavioral issues worse? Right. They basically said, you know, I'm not one side or the other. You know, I'm not sure where I sit on it. But this person felt very confident that post their experience with using a balanced dog trainer, that their dog's aggression issues got worse after that training. Right. Now, it led to a really interesting conversation that we're not going to totally repeat here or anything like that, obviously. But in a nutshell, I think that there are some places where, you know, by being too firm, you could create more confusion and more frustration with certain dogs, and especially with things that aren't totally clear to them. You know what I mean? And I think it's important for us to highlight some of that kind of stuff as balanced dog trainers of, you know, the force-free community. I don't remember if it was you guys that said it or what, but like... basically, in a nutshell, like any extreme that you have, there's a degree of truth behind it. You know what I mean? And the force freeze, you know, critiques of balanced dog training that they have of, you know, risk of fallout with certain things or added stress or, you know, increased cortisol levels and all that kind of stuff. You know, you got to weed through a lot of bullshit through that. But there is a degree of truth of if done in a certain way, you can have problems turn out from this kind of stuff. And, you know, as you do longer form content and through the podcast, we're able to highlight and talk about some of those things a little bit more, I think. And I think that helps give a little bit more clear of a message for people.
Well, and I think a good point would be you can potentially have problems or you can just have the other thing, which is no better, which is I wouldn't say new problems arose, just the old problems haven't yet subsided.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like, I'm still at square one, no matter how you look at it. Right.
Yeah.
So definitely. And I think that a really cool way to approach these kinds of conversations, and I enjoy when you have them, and you said the latest episode is 134.
I think it's 134. I'm pretty sure.
I think it's 135, but I'm sure you're right.
You might be right.
I think you're
right.
You might actually be right.
Because every time I start the podcast, I say the number and then I look at Josh. I was like, was that right? And I would say at least 50% of the time, he's like, no, that was not right.
Either way, it sounds awesome. So that was a really cool question. That's a really interesting question.
Yeah, like, I thought it was a good one.
Training
yeah.
makes my dog worse. That's cool. I want to hear that for sure. So I think that as all of us, because we're all podcasters and we all, you know, do our social media thing and we're all dog trainers and business owners and all of us have audiences and like these different facets, right? And I think that if we're going to continue spending time like having these conversations, I think a really cool way to do that in the most productive way is to do it, you know, kind of Socratically, right? Like when people ask, you know, at what cost, then I need you to define for me the cost. I need you to define for me the potential benefits. Like, let's know what we're talking about here, right?
Sure.
Whenever R+ trainers, you know, talk, as rare as it is, and they're like, no, I just don't think that it's worth like, you know, torturing a dog. And I'm like, well, here's a good question. Define torture.
Yeah.
You know, define unfair, define unusual, define cruel, define confused. Like, you know, because I can tell you that as a dog trainer, I think we would all agree with this. It's like cops hate when they see a cop do something that they shouldn't.
Sure.
Probably more than anybody else hates it, right? Because now you make me look bad type thing. I think that a trainer who utilizes tools when necessary, but knows what they're doing, there's few things that they've spent as much time on as trying to figure out, when shouldn't I? What does qualify as an effective moment to use this thing, and why? Like, what am I looking for as an outcome? And if I don't get this outcome, what am I going to pivot into? And there's that whole system. There's that whole pre-thought out process. And that, in my mind, is what differentiates trainers and owners anyway. Like, owners can do the thing. You press a fucking button and, you know,
yeah.
But the trainer can read and analyze in real time. Like, and if it doesn't happen, I'm going to do this. I'm going to turn up. I'm going to turn down. I'm going to bring food. I'm going to, you know, whatever. So in my mind, that's kind of the way to go about it, is like, if you're going to throw these words at me, let's define them, and let's make sure that you're not being a little bit like hyperbolic here.
Yeah.
Like, am I
one of my favorite things to ask people, like just in the comment section, like whenever I get like the abuse term thrown around or things like that, I always ask, I was like, what is your definition of abuse? And how does what you're seeing in this video fit within that definition? Right. And so far to this day, I've never had anybody be able to successfully outline that without their definition somehow contradicting some other place where something that definitely is not abuse would fall into that definition. You know what I mean? So I think that gets really weird. And then also the other big one I hear thrown around is like compulsion trainer. Right. So you hear, you're not even a balanced trainer. You're a compulsion trainer. To which I always ask, I was like, what's the definition of compulsion trainer? And how is it different from the definition of balanced trainer then at that point? Right. And I think having clear definitions to things shows you how loosely some of these words are thrown around sometimes in order to try to make somebody look bad, you know?
Yep.
I agree with you 100%, but I think that one big way to combat that is not so much like, give me your definition of abuse.
Sure.
Because I think that one of the big problems in any type of heated argument right now in general is people change definitions.
Sure.
So I think it's important to be like, no, give me the definition of abuse, because you're using a word and a word is used to convey a thought, to convey a meaning. So give me that word's meaning.
Yeah, they use the word for the emotional response, not for the definition.
But the problem is they're using it like this.
Exactly.
And someone else in the comments read it and they think it's like that.
But that's what I'm saying, right? Is that everybody's using a different definition for it, I feel like.
Right.
Right? They're holding those words to different metrics past like whatever Webster's definition for that word is, you know?
Right, which is why I'd be like, well, give me the definition.
Sure.
Right. Because that's what we're basing things off of. If someone says to me, I have a car, I'm going to assume they mean like what the definition, you know, not like you have some other definition, right? This isn't Urban Dictionary, right? So I tend to like to hold people to the definition of words.
Sure.
Right. And then you need to say to me like what you actually mean to say.
Yep.
Right. And, you know, yeah, I think that that's a really smart way to go about it. You know, the compulsion thing, that's a really interesting one too, because It is like surprisingly difficult for a lot of people to be like, I don't know. Like, basically compulsion in most people's minds means you're a little too heavy handed for my liking.
Yep. Right? Or you're resorting to it too fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I would argue, and I obviously don't have like a definition either, but in my mind, a compulsion trainer versus a balanced trainer, it's kind of Brent's point of like the ideological base core difference. A compulsion trainer believes more in getting stuff done with force and may have a little food thrown in, but this is my like go-to.
Yeah.
Right. A balanced trainer wants to teach a dog with reinforcement based method and puts in a level of compulsion where necessary. And they kind of meet in the middle a lot. And that's why I think it's hard to define. But like at their core, I think that's where the difference is.
Yeah. It's where's the line between making you and showing you?
Yeah.
Like, where's that line?
Exactly.
I completely understand it. I actually completely agree with you with those kind of definitions behind it. I think the problem with even getting to that, though, is, you know, like we were just talking, like I would say most, we'll say balanced dog trainers out there, right, will do a degree of both, you know, like there's definitely situations you look at where it's like, I'm going to definitely lean into this side and I'm going to approach things as a quote unquote compulsion trainer. The dog I was referring to that we got the review from, like that was definitely a compulsion based approach, right, with that dog. But there's a ton of dogs we have come in that are highly motivated. We could lean much more heavily into that side of things, where I think it's okay to be open and talk about that. You know, sometimes we do both, right? But I don't, you know, I think a lot of people talk about, you know, they hate the idea of like labels anyways. They don't like even saying balanced dog trainer, force-free dog trainer, compulsion dog trainer, or anything like that, because as a trainer, you're going to kind of blend all of those different things based on all of the variables you have present.
And here's my difficulty, and this is part of why, not part of why, because we're just, you know, I just like you, we're cool, like we're friends, but a big reason that I really get excited to speak with you is because I'm about to say something that you completely understand and know way better than me, and I'd love to get your take on.
Oh boy.
Is is where do babies come from? No, I'm just kidding. So like,
I know nothing about
it's it's I agree with what you're saying. Like labels, they can be ineffectual. They can be counterproductive is what you're saying.
Sure.
And yet, I think a big part of the reason certain trainers and certain programs are getting so popular is because from the perspective of advertising, from the perspective of marketing and branding, labels are very important.
Yeah.
And brand. I'd love to get your
That's
take on
That's the key
like,
word you just put out there is brand, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd love to get your take. Like, how does one wrestle with, I don't want to like stuff myself into this box, but at the same time, how do I package my materials? When I go online and I pay money for ads, I say to my clients, what I can offer you is what, right? And there's that fun like middle ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where you I think that's where you get back to like, if you keep your focus on your results, right? And you market your results. Actually, I'm wrestling with this question that you asked also, because it's like, you know, you want to be clear to people and transparent. Like, I think a lot of the reason why our clients trust us is because we're open with people about all of the different methods that we use and, you know, the types of trainers that we are and stuff like that, obviously. But in the end of the day, you know, if people have a serious pain point that they're looking to have helped, right, whether their dog's acting aggressively towards their other dog in the house, or, you know, the dog is just completely out of control and they're a small person and can't control them, or whatever it may be, if you could solve that issue for them, I think most clientele are going to be pretty okay with whatever it is that that route kind of looks like. You know what I mean?
And in terms of like, branding.
Yeah.
Because you built a really successful business in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And I'm on your website right now. Sure. Like the way it's laid out, the way it's, you know, it's all very concise and very clear.
Yeah.
So like in terms of branding, kind of wrestle that other line a little bit.
The other line is when you see certain things work or you see certain things resonate with people, it's hard to not lean into it, right? So again, not to keep throwing Dog Daddy out there, but I just interviewed him and some of this stuff is really fresh. And one of my biggest critiques that him and I debated over the course of that interview was the brand he's created for himself, I think, is what has gotten him into so much trouble. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's built this brand around being the fucking tough guy that can come in and wrangle these aggressive dogs and get them under control and fix them. You know what I mean? And I think he's self-aware that that's not the whole picture, right? But at the same time, I think he said in the podcast, he's like, well, like, if a certain type of post you were making, every time you posted it, garnered 50 million views, you're probably going to keep posting it. And I was like, damn, I was like, I still don't really agree with the brand that you're making for yourself, but like you're not wrong about that. You know what I mean? Like if something I started posting every time was fucking hitting, right? And people were resonating and it was creating really good conversation, it's going to be tough for me not to do that. Another one I see a lot of trainers do is they'll post these like vague, ominous like questions or statements that could mean anything and they're a little controversial, you know what I mean? And it just sparks crazy fucking debate in the comments section, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm sure that individual kind of knows what they're doing anytime they post that stuff. If this is going to create some really interesting conversation that I'm going to be able to kind of weed through later and create a really good topic off of, but that's kind of the thing I think you struggle with brand is fine to, you know, laying on that ethical line of this is who we are, right? This is the message we're putting out there to people. And we want to obviously garner views and garner business. Like, listen, I got into owning a dog training business because it's a business, right? I need to make money. I need to support the people that work for me and stuff like that. And in order to do that, I need to have traffic coming into our website and our social media platforms. But sometimes in doing that, you then contradict yourself where then you draw them in. And then they kind of come into your circle, and then they realize once they're in your circle that things are a little different than what you were branding. So you got to figure out a way to put it out there in a way that's going to garner the attention, but not going to be too contradictory to what you're actually doing, right? So just speaking your truth, right?
Let me make this statement, and I want you guys to tell me if you agree with this or not.
All right.
So it sounds to me like the difference between somebody who builds a brand ethically or responsibly, you could say, and someone who doesn't is the person who does. We all understand views are a currency, but they they put equal attention into doing things that gain them followers and attention, and they put equal effort into, once they've gained all that, explain to them that there is more. Right? Like, this isn't the entire complete picture.
Sure. Or I think that they put just as much emphasis onto the experience once you've gotten the people actually in, right? Because, like, let's look at it from a different industry. Like, how many times have you went to a restaurant because their branding is unbelievable and their social media channel is out of this world and stuff like right. that, and then you go there and it's fucking dog shit, right? It's the service is terrible, the food is just boring and basic, and you leave there having had a bad experience. But they're going to keep generating tons and tons of new clientele walking in that door because of their branding, but they're not going to actually retain any of those clients because the service and the experience they're providing is then no good, right? So I think it's okay to leave a little bit, you know, more that meets the eye, where it's like, until I get you into the circle, you're not going to get the complete picture, as long as the complete picture you get once you go in is providing the outcome and the experience that is aligned with the brand you're selling. Does that kind of make sense?
Oh, that's a cool way to look at it. Yeah, it's like, it's basically like saying, it's like, you don't have to, like, straight up outline everything, but, but what you're hinting at has to be true, basically.
Yeah, well, it's like that. Exactly. It's like that text I sent you yesterday. So I was listening to a podcast, and they quoted Alex Hormozi, and they were talking about, what does authenticity mean, right? Because that word gets hijacked. Yeah, he's great. He's actually, I've only listened to him, like, the last month. I'm like, he's cool as hell. Yeah, but one of the definitions he has for authenticity is just where what you say, think, and do are all in alignment.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, just don't be fake. Don't be 100%. Fake. Don't be a poser. 100%. Like, that's authenticity. And the funny thing is, what you think can change as you get older, or as you evolve, right? And as long as you're in alignment with what you think and believe and say and do, then it's like, then you're being authentic to who you are and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of what we're talking about.
I think it 100% is. And where was I going to go with that? I think really it is focusing on the experience and the outcome and making sure that's just as good, though, I think is the most important part. I alluded to, again, last time, you know, we're a business first and foremost. You know what I mean? Like, we have a big online presence, and you know, we're all over social media and stuff like that, which is great, and that helps the business. But in the end of the day, the business is what I have my attention on. And things as simple as, like, from the grassroots side of things, right, are Google reviews, right? We are, I think, the only dog trainer in Cleveland that has a 100% perfect 5-star Google review. Like, we haven't turned our Google reviews off or anything like that, like a lot of bigger name dog trainers do, obviously. You could see them all, like the actual experience that clients have had while they're with us, right? And you know, because of that, and because of how we have then the business lined up, where it's like, all right, we have all this content out there to keep you kind of in our loop and keep us, like, in your head, obviously, even post training. We have our boarding and our daycare services, so that we have clients that I've trained 7 years ago that still come in for regular boarding and daycare and still know they can call us with any questions and stuff they have. Because the experience is the first and foremost thing that we push, we're going to generate all that word of mouth, and anything we put out there from a social media standpoint, we could feel confident that if they get into our circle, they're going to have that same experience, right? Even if it's a little different in this way or that way or whatever it may be, in the end of the day, they're not going to leave unhappy.
Sure. And experience is a really cool word to use for that, because I think it, like, it really encompasses what you're looking for. What was the overall experience that this client has, right? And something that I find myself recommending to my trainers, and that I wish more people would consider when you want to vet out your own experience from beginning to end, is, you have a dog, hire another trainer, do a lesson or two, and just see how it goes, how it feels, like how they teach. And
I've thought about, you know, doing, and that. It's,
why not? Well, you know, well, like,
I've thought about doing that from, like, a undercover kind of, like, let's learn about our competition side of things, but
no, and that's what I mean. But I don't look at that as, like, a negative per se. Like, why not? Sure. If I owned a restaurant, I'd eat at other places too. 100%. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. I don't have to walk in there and announce myself, like, hey, I own this place down the street. It's going to be like, well, how's your burger?
Yeah. There was, let me know. There was, you guys bring up a funny story. There was a competitor out here in LA. We had, at one point, the company I used to work for was the biggest dog training facility in Los Angeles. And we, one of our competitors, he's this Russian guy. He goes by Master Dog Trainer. Now he is a whole, he's like a, anyways, let's not worry about him. He came, scheduled an evaluation, sat down with the behavior specialist. He's Russian, so he had a translator with him, right? This was at my old facility.
Sure.
He had a translator with him who was speaking for him because, oh, he speaks Russian. He doesn't speak anything. Now, this guy knows English. He's fine. But he wastes 2.5 hours of our times trying to understand what we have to offer, understanding our services, understanding all this stuff. And then he leaves, and we see him pull out in his company car that has all his branding and everything on it. And I remember my mentor at the time was just like, this motherfucker. Like, instead of just calling and asking for a tour, right, and asking us questions, he wanted to come in all shady and get like an undercover service thing. But anyways, yeah, it just reminded me of that.
But I guess I don't look at it like it's shady if you don't say anything. Like, that's weird, I guess, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But I see nothing wrong with me calling someone right now and being like, hey, I'm another dog trainer, but I'd like for you to do some lessons with me with my dog. I just want to see how you do.
Yeah. This is where you get back to kind of,
I mean, they can say no.
Well, this is where you get back to kind of like ends justifying means. Because like I think I read one time in maybe it was like Good to Great or something like that, some business development book, and they were talking about how I think it was the owner of Walgreens or Walmart. It was one of the two of them, I believe. And how he would spend the majority of his day inside of whatever his competitor. So if it was Walgreens, it was like Rite Aid or something like that. Like, he would go and shop at Rite Aid and just get, you know, like, hey, how is everything outlined here? What's my checkout experience look like? What is the staffing organization and stuff like that? And I think that's a normal business tactic. I think it just feels a little shadier from a dog training standpoint, because I think a lot of people would look at that like, oh, well, if you were to do that and you were to try to, like, you know, see what the experience is like at another dog training company, you must be doing it with the lens of trying to tear that person down, which is not the case. You just want to learn if I go do a board and train with Joe Schmo Dog Trainer down the street from me, right? Mm-hmm. What things are they doing different over the course of the program, right? What types of things are they doing different as far as how they sell me on the program, how they book me with it, how I send my documentation and stuff into them, what the follow-up structure is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you could take that as data to never put it out into the world and be like, oh, like, whoa, this person did this and that's so stupid and blah, 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 blah. But you could do it from the light of like, all right, well, these are changes I want to make within my company because I either like these things or didn't like these things. And the thing is, we do that already. We do that via everybody's social media channels and watching their instructional content that they put out there. And we do it borderline from the same standpoint by clients that come in that have been to other training companies, and you hear about their experience they had there and you learn from that. And if there was something good, you could adjust it. And if there was something bad, you could adjust it. You know what I mean? But I think that's why that's like a, like kind of like a taboo thing. I think that's why people would look at that as something shady.
Yeah. Like, I'm not naive. I realize a lot of people would look at that as taboo, but I guess in my mind, I just don't quite see why. Like, as long as you're not being shady about it, like somebody taking 2.5 hours of your time, that's kind of stupid, right? Mm-hmm. Well, not to mention lying about not speaking. Like, there's things there.
There's a lot that of when you break it down there.
Yes.
Right. If there's things there that it's like, well, then why didn't you just speak to me in English? Yeah. What was this tactic about?
If someone is using that many deceptive tactics, then you can only assume malintent, right?
Yeah.
So,
I think it's beyond
if they were
up front,
then it's like, all right.
Because if somebody's using, you know, deceptive tactics, then they're already kind of validating your concern.
I think the weird thing with that situation is that they didn't actually hire you for anything. So they did just waste your time. Like, I would look at it from the lens of,
I would do a business
transaction. I just want to pay you for your program, right? And then not even myself go through it, but like a friend of mine, I'll pay for the program for a friend of mine to go through it so I could learn about it a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
So that was exactly my point, was like, I want to sign up like my assistant for a package of lessons with someone else for her dog type thing. But I want to actually, you know, give these people business and I want to, you know, and it's just for the common knowledge that they clearly would teach any, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the idea. But I feel like that's good research. I don't see why that's anything.
No. Here's the tough thing about it, though, is if you make it known that, like, let's say we wanted to set that up and I told you, I was like, Mariano, I want to send my trainer to you for your one-on-one program package. You know that you're going to kind of you're going to pizzazz that program up just a little bit. You're going to be a little more on top of your P's and Q's, right, to make sure the experience is good. Where I want to know what the real experience is, right, for just your everyday clients. And that's the tough part
right there.
Where is you draw the line of, like, you can't really be super, or if you were to ever try to do something like that, you can't be super open. And I want to make it clear to everybody that's listening to this, we're not trying to freaking go and this is an interesting conversation, I think, as far as, like, business practices of learning about your competitors and stuff. I think learning about your competitors is very open. But that's where you get to, again, where is the line of that, right? Where is the line where it becomes unfair?
Yeah, just the overall idea to me is, like, why is dog training so secretive?
Yeah, sure.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Like, that's why I'm like, you know, why wouldn't you be okay with that? Yeah. Like, if the, you know, like, I think the difference is, we were talking about, you know, Rite Aid and Walgreens, and these, they're stores. They sell products. It's kind of, like, there is a service element, right? Like, if somebody's a little more happy to see you, right? Like, it's a different feeling walking into a Rite Aid versus walking into, like, a fancy restaurant. Hello, sir, how are you? Yeah. You know, like, there's an element of customer service that's different. But ultimately, the product is the product. Like, the steak's either good or it's not.
Yeah.
Right? Versus in the service industry.
Yeah. It's a little different.
It's a little different, but I feel like dog training is very unique on that front. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's all secret and it's all weird and it's all, like, you know, I've hired, you know, fucking dogs in this house, and I have two, this house has two air conditioners in it, 'cause I live in Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. Like, two big units on the top, you know? And you know, I'll hire somebody to come and, like, clean out the ducts and do the whole thing for the summer to make sure I don't, like, have issues halfway through. And I know that all the companies, like, talk to each other because they have, like, this one system here, like, this one kind of network. I give them my address and, oh, you're this person. And I'm like, oh, weird, right?
Yeah.
So it's not awkward for them, you know, and it's a very service-related industry because, like, you do the thing, you clean my ducts out. But whoever's easier to get a hold of, whoever's easier to schedule, like, that matters. And that more than anything, when everyone can do the same job.
Yeah.
Kind of dictates who you go with.
Why do you think that, there is that?
This is what I was going to say. I want to kind of bring it back into that because I think I kind of have a little bit of an understanding. Do we think some of it has to do with either one of two things? One is that there is a large percentage of dog trainers out there that are not completely confident in the work they're doing, right? Meaning, I mean, listen, like, we could look at, I know a lot of local trainers around here. I'm very aware of my competition in the area, right? At least locally, right? And I know that, at least from a behavioral modification standpoint, with a lot of these companies out there, there's a pretty low success rate, right? So I think some of it could be that, right? I think the other side of it could be that, getting back to marketing and branding and stuff like that, I think sometimes trainers brand themselves a little bit too much as they have the magic solution for everything, right? And they don't highlight enough what we were talking about after we tried to film this last thing, which is the failures, right? Like, and another great thing that I love about the podcast is we've done many podcast episodes before talking about the failures, and not just the little failures, but, like, the big failures we've had, like, dogs that we've tried to do the rehabilitation thing and we could not get them safe enough, and we wound up needing to recommend euthanasia or something like that, or situations where we had really unhappy clients for whatever reason, right? And how we navigated solving those problems, or any number of those types of things. And because in this industry we want to kind of hide that that's a reality a little bit, I think that's where everything starts becoming more secretive. Because if you were to look at a personal trainer, right? Like, they're, you know, if you ask them, hey, do you have any clients that don't get six-pack abs by the end of your program? They'd be like, yeah, absolutely. A gazillion. Right. I'm sure the large majority of them are that way. But in this industry, we don't really want to talk about the situations where it didn't work out.
Well, see, that was the point I was alluding to, was, and it's funny, I use personal trainers as an example. I remember I had a trainer who I let go a few months ago. And for the longest time, I kept trying to convince them to like learn from other service providers, learn from other teachers and coaches, even if they're not dog trainers. And I used the example, I was like, do you go to the gym? You should hire a personal trainer, you know? And like, and not because of, like, I don't care, I don't give a shit how you look, but you should do it for the experience. And the reason I chose personal trainers instead of, like, you know, anything else is, they have a very similar experience in, they have to teach you, like, analytically, here's what you're going to do, here's why you're going to do it. And then when you're in the thick of it and you know what to do, but you're unsure about your belief, like, can I get this last rep? Can I, you know, am I strong enough? Am I whatever? They have to have the know-how, the knowledge on how to push you as well as teach you, right?
Yeah.
And I would tell her all the time, like, look, And Blake Rodriguez raves about it all the time, as through jiu-jitsu, same shit, right? It's like, look, when you earn these experiences with coaches and with, you know, people who know how to push you and teach you new things, you take those lessons and then you can kind mm-hmm. of, you know, you can like evolve them into you through osmosis, and then you can go and teach them out to the world. And I kept trying to get, you know, her to do that, and she just wouldn't. And so now I'm like on this kick of, you guys should hire someone and try it. You know, if dog training is this weird taboo, then hire a personal trainer, or hire, you know what I mean? Like, do something, but get into the habit of being a student of the game of people who have to coach people through difficult times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just people that provide good experiences. I would say one of the places, exactly, like the reason why I use experience a lot is, I have two of my best friends that I have, run a really, really high end family and newborn photography company, right? I'm talking they're like LeBron James's personal family photographer, like big name people. They get flown out for stuff all over the place and stuff. And they do like 30 minute sessions to 45 minute sessions that cost like $5,000 for like photos, right? And if you were to look at that, the large majority of people would be like, there is no fucking way in hell I would pay that much for 30 minutes of photography, right? But if you look at the experience that they have crafted around these shoots that they do, the attention to detail they have into every single freaking piece of the equation is absolutely out of control, unbelievable, right? And the more you understand how to not just market yourself, because their marketing and branding is very, very good too, and they put a lot of attention into that, and they got a big online following and stuff, but the experience itself, that's what justifies that and gets you reputable within your respective industry. You know what I mean? And I think dog trainers don't focus enough on that. How do you separate yourself from the rest of your competition? And I'll tell you that it's not going to come from your dog training. You know what I mean? It's going to provide, it's going to come from the experience. Because I've had clients before early on in training where we did a great job with the training and the dog wound up being very successful, but their experience with the training was subpar, right? The time took to reply to emails and phone calls was not on par with what we would want it to be now, obviously. The communication that they had, all that kind of stuff was just, you know, it could have been better. Sure. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great, right? And that's not going to leave an impression in that person's mind long term, even though they wound up getting all of their training needs solved. But the ones that the experience was unbelievable and we were really on top of stuff and we kept them through the loop and we made them feel really important and we made them feel like we really deeply care about their dog and all that kind of stuff, those are the ones that we've had the longest lasting relationships with, that have wound up turning into the most referrals and the most new business garnered from that individual.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's – go ahead.
No, I was going to say one thing I've realized – so – you know, kind of like, you know, steel sharpens steel, game respects game kind of thing. I noticed that through our interviews, there are a handful of people, right? Blake Rodriguez, Tom Davis, Vinny Soma, and you, David, that I feel kind of a kinfolk spirit with you guys, because I think we're all hardworking. We're all
good looking.
We're all fucking good looking. That's true. I think Blake wins that one. Fuck Blake, man.
Yeah, dude. Is that dark complexion? And
I know he's jeez, he wins. But
I can get there. Leave me out in the sun for an hour and a half.
Yeah, then you just look like a burnt Mexican. Anyway, we're entrepreneurial. Like, we have dreams, but the thing is that we all care about people.
Sure.
And we care about dogs, and we care about the craft. And I think we have no problem. Like, when we were talking about, like, why are people so protective of stuff, I realized, like, I'm not protective of dog training because it's not mine. You know what I mean? It's not something I created. Like, I'm protective of my staff. I'm protective of my company. I'm protective of the things that I've created. But when there's information and knowledge or quote-unquote secrets that I've picked up from great people or doing research or experience, I'm like, I know I'm not the only one that invented, that created this idea. Yeah. I straight up know who I took this idea from. So it's like not mine. So I can't be defensive and protective of it. So I share that with other trainers.
Just, you're confident in it. You know what I mean? Like, that is such a misunderstanding. Dude, I talk
But because I don't identify with it, because I don't identify with the dog training.
That's a big point, too. But let's look at it this way, right? Like, I do a lot of consults with younger trainers, right? Mm-hmm. And what it hurts me sometimes when I see these younger trainers, like, they idolize an individual thinking that individual has all of their answers to every problem that they ever have. And they find themselves just in this trap where they're just constantly, like, every time they run into issue, they need to, like, run back to that person. They're like, what do I do here? What do I do here? What do I do here? And listen, we all have to learn. And learning, you know, and having mentors and stuff like that is great. We've talked about it, obviously. But at a certain point, you've got to trust that you're going to be able to navigate those hurdles and problem solve. And the more confident in that you are, the better of a trainer you're going to become and the less secretive you're going to be over that stuff. I really genuinely think that.
100%.
Well, and I look at it too as, like, as you guys are talking about this, my mind goes immediately to, like, people politics and, oh God, I love this guy. Oh God, I love that guy. You know, and there are people who are like, overall, I have my preference, but I can see where this is wrong and I can see where the other side had that better and, like, blah, blah, blah. But then there are people that are like, oh my God, you disagree. Well, we just don't vibe, like, period. Sure. Right. And I look at it as this, like, this willingness to convey loyalty, which is good. It's misguided, but it's good. And in dog training, I guess the reason I don't see it as, like, a taboo to hire another trainer and, you know, and so on, but I also wouldn't lie about it. Right?
Sure.
I don't see it as a taboo because loyalty is obviously a good thing. You want your staff to be loyal. You want you want your family and everything. Like, you want that as a trait, but loyal to what? Right? Like, that's kind of another ends and means conversation. Right? If you're loyal to an ideal, to you know, some, like, one single person on a subject, that they could be wrong. It's possible. Or maybe they're right in the sense that it makes sense for them but not for you, which happens all the time. Then that's just not smart. You should have a sense of loyalty and a sense of determination, and it should be guided more toward, I guess, outcome, or I guess, you know, like the best version of what's currently available and so on, right? Like, even in things that shouldn't matter nearly as much, like, you know, like, oh, well, you have an Android, I have an iPhone. No one gives a fuck, right? Like, if iPhone makes a really cool phone this year, I'll probably get one. If the Pixel 9 is super sweet.
They didn't make a
sweet
cool phone this year.
They didn't, but the Pixel 8's weak because I was going to buy one. And so I'm like, you know, I'm probably going to go for the iPhone because it looks cool. It looks better than the Pixel did. But if next year, then I'm just going to go with what's the best, right? Like, my loyalty is to myself. My loyalty is to program. Not other people who are like, oh, yeah, but this app looks better on this phone than that phone. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not that different that I, you know, that it's the same shit. But loyalty is good, but it's, like, often misused in the wrong ways. And I think that I see that a lot online. You know, even when people try to talk about, like, sciences, you know, like, when did it become cool to be, like, you know, loyal to death to the AVSAB instead of to the sciences that allowed them to create the studies that they cite that we can go through and read and understand as an overall process? You know what I mean? It's so strange to me.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I just want to get your guys' take on that.
Yeah, I think loyalty is interesting, right? Because, like, listen, team iPhone, bro, right? I'm team iPhone. I like iPhones.
Pixel,
and in
Pixel
my loyalty to iPhones, I like to talk shit about Androids. So, but a couple things, right?
You.
Like, but I used to have an Android back in the day, right? And I used to be team Android, right? And I used my, like, I went up to, like, the Samsung Galaxy 8 or whatever the hell it was, right? And it hit a point for me where
that's
at least
back in the day.
Yeah, it was an old one. It probably was 12 years ago, something like that, 10 years ago. And I think it hit a point where the opposing side had to become, like, undeniably better for me to switch over to it, right? And I think that's human nature. We want to cling on to something and we want to attach to something that we kind of align ourselves with. We want to be kind of in that team, right? And I don't think there's anything you're necessarily going to do to change that. Like, I think we could all say, well, we're always just going to go with what's better, which I think is an important mindset to have, and it's important to try to critically look at that. But, like, inevitably, that's not how really
you're gonna
everybody
go with what's
works
familiar
all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah, we're always going to go to what's familiar to some extent as well, right?
What feels safe. Yeah.
So knowing that, if you're trying to kind of change somebody's mind with things or get somebody to kind of switch and be more open-minded towards something that they might not be aligning themselves with currently, you've got to look at things from the lens of make your truth more make it undeniable that it's better, right? And if you do that, you will start to get some attention surrounding whatever it is you're doing. I can't think of an exact example, but I'm sure there's things that I've, like, really held back on getting involved in, right? And all sorts of different aspects of my life until it hit a point where it was just so apparent that that thing is better than whatever it is that I'm currently doing that I have to switch over to it. Actually, no, I can think of one. Instagram. When freaking Instagram came out, I was all loyal to Facebook, right? And I was like, nah, I'm not going to go to Instagram. Nah, I'm not going to go to Instagram or TikTok. I'm not going to go to TikTok. I'm not going to go to TikTok. But until it hit a point where it undeniably was the platform that was blowing people up, it was garnering so much more attention than any of the other ones, that's when I was like, all right, I got to switch. I get it now. I could see it, right? But I think as human nature, it needs to become undeniable for that to be the case.
It's true.
That's a really cool take on that, for sure. It's like, convince me, basically.
Yeah, and it's a gamble, right? You don't want to have everybody convince everything to you. But as humans, we all have egos. We all are gonna really glue ourselves to stuff, and some of us are a little bit more hard-headed and stubborn than others, you know? I kept bringing back like confidence in yourself and your abilities and stuff like that. Like I've always been a very confident individual from whatever regards of what it is that I'm doing. So inevitably it's just going to take more to convince me that something I'm doing might be incorrect, but you gotta be self-aware of that still so that you can't, you know, fall too far down that rabbit hole.
Sure. Like you need to know it for yourself. It's like,
you got it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta make the mistakes for myself.
Yeah.
Tell that to my parents all the time. Cool guys. I'm having a little bit of trouble remembering. And you said I have two things. I think I know the two reasons why people are overprotective of their stuff. And I know you said one, they're not confident in their training. What was the second one?
Oh yeah, yeah. So branding and marketing themselves as they have the solution for that any problem.
Right. Over marketing and branding themselves.
Over marketing and overcompensating that. Anything can be solved. I could rehabilitate any dog that is presented for me. I could fix any problem that's presented. It can always be done with the force-free approach, whatever, right? Any of those types of things. By getting too extreme with those just matter-of-fact blanket statements like that, I think you could wind up shooting yourself in the foot where you wind up contradicting yourself a lot at certain points. Even though what you're doing might not be wrong, right? The way you've marketed and branded yourself puts you in a position where you're kind of fibbing the truth a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. I think it almost has, there's almost no way that you don't shoot yourself in the foot when you do that, because you can look at it as like, there's a difference in my mind between, I think this way is better, and I think that other way is objectively worse.
Yeah.
Right. Like somebody can go online and be like, I can fix any dog. Yeah. And I don't necessarily believe it, but I don't necessarily have issue with it either because of the confidence thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Versus somebody going and being like, let me tell you why if you use tools, you're bad. Like you're wrong. Yeah, you're just objectively wrong all the time, no matter what, period, point blank. Those are two very different statements to me. And in the second one, you almost can't be right, at least not 100% of the time, because that means that I wonder how many dogs exist right now on Earth. And that means you're saying there isn't a single case for a single dog where this tool has its place.
Yeah.
And that's a big statement to make. That's a big assumption to make.
Yeah.
And I don't think any logical I feel like even a force-free trainer, honestly, like even unless they were just straight up lying to themselves, if you were to really sit them down and ask them that, are you telling me there's, you know, I don't know, 100 billion dogs in the world right now. Are you telling me that there isn't one?
100 billion. There's not even that.
Whatever.
Many,
you know what I'm saying? Whatever. You got my, well, I mean, how many people have several dogs, right? But but whatever. Let's say there are.
Doesn't matter.
750 million dogs in the world. It doesn't matter the number. The point is there's a shit ton, right? Yeah. And they're everywhere. And cultures are all different. And people are all different. And the dogs are all different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you really telling me there isn't one example that could possibly exist where somebody might benefit from this thing?
Yeah.
Not one ever in any way.
Yeah. Well, look at the phrasing.
Then the whole narrative starts to fall apart.
Look at the phrasing of a lot of the statements and questions, though. So like when we were talking about like the initial like Zach George war against balanced dog training stuff that was happening like 6 months ago or whatever, when I was doing the podcast, in it, he was leaning on the use of the intentional use of aversives is never required, right? Meaning it's impossible to do it without the use of them, right? And you hit a point where technically speaking, right? If we were to really look at any of these situations that you throw out there, you could probably get ridiculously creative and craft up some sort of management and counter conditioning and training plan where you might not ever reach X goal, but if you had long enough, if you had 1,000 years, right? If you had 15,000 years, you might eventually be able to get to that goal that you're talking about. You know what I mean?
Remember when you had us on and we talked about oversimplification?
Yeah.
I think, so I agree with what you're saying, because I too have been really like interested in exactly how people phrase these things.
Yeah.
And it's no coincidence that they just use or avoid certain verbiage, right?
Yeah.
Like I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. Like a lawyer, like a politician.
Sure.
That being said.
Are you combing your hair right now?
I just found it. I have to use it.
Yeah? Oh, I like
it. Yeah, I found it on my desk.
The Rico Suave.
That being said, every single country or area that has like a ban on a certain tool or certain training methodology also has bans on breeds and also yeah. has bans on like different, like it doesn't seem to be a coincidence that like if you can't have this, you also for some reason can't handle this dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes me wonder what happened to all the dogs that used to be in that country. I know,
poor right? dogs.
Yeah,
so.
Sure.
So I'm coming to the oversimplification thing because it's like, you know, someone can dance around it and not technically say anything like technically false,
mm-hmm.
but the oversimplification kicks in where it's like, yeah, but what about if I want like a pit bull? What about if I want like a German Shepherd? Mm-hmm. What about if I want like a Doberman? What about it? You know? And then they're like, oh, well, you know, it's not allowed in this country. I'm like, yeah, but why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can still kind of run your way down that rabbit hole and still ultimately get to like, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Is my point. Is like you can oversimplify your way around it, but that doesn't make it not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just think, and I 100% agree with what you're saying, right? And that's kind of a whole other conversation. But then you get into like, yeah, but everybody has a hypothetical scientific reason as to like any example you can give what maybe might work. Like I think the biggest thing a lot of balanced dog trainers were trying to push back against for that kind of conversation was like, well, what about like predatory aggression towards, mm-hmm. you know, animals, dogs, people, things like that, where it's not rooted in any sort of fear. It really is this like natural drive that they have to want to do something. And it's just, mm-hmm. It doesn't even need reinforcement in order to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you get into like, there's all these people out there that are these like positive predatory experts that have these like really crazy, you know, studies and the chemistry of the brain works this way when they're in a predatory state of mind. So knowing mm-hmm. that positive reinforcement affects the brain in X way, technically speaking, if you were to have both of them happen at the same time, this could, you get what I'm saying? Like it will continue to go down that rabbit hole of like, well, mm-hmm. under the right circumstances, no, we could still do that, even with the pit bull, even with the Rottweiler,
right,
even with the German Shepherd.
But that's the yeah. oversimplification
yes,
right
I,
there,
I
though.
Totally,
tell me about these right circumstances,
I
right?
Totally
like, tell
agree.
Me about how I can have a dog if I just can never crate them and never leave the house without them. And, you know, so
yeah.
it's like, sure, under the right circumstances, I could probably look like Arnold, but this is the real world,
it's
and
true.
I'm not going to inject myself with steroids and work out all day long and not have a life. Like, it's just,
yeah.
so that there's like ideal, not even ideal,
yeah.
there's technically
fabricated.
Possible circumstances.
Yeah.
but you see,
well, fabricated implies falsehood, right?
But you see this conversation we're having where, like, you know, I'm just kind of playing the devil's advocate of, like, what you're saying.
No, I understand
I
that.
100% agree with you, obviously, right? Like, you know, I think that whole kind of, that whole jargon, 90% of it is kind of BS, and the use of aversives are just in the world, right? It happens, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of if I'm applying them or the nature is providing them or they're just happening or whatever it may be, right? But
sure.
all this legislation, these studies and this and that are done from the spectrum of we could always craft a picture in which they work, right? And they're better.
And I don't think that they're wrong,
yeah.
but what does that picture look like? That's what
totally
nobody
agree.
Tends to ask
that's
themselves.
Nobody, that's what
right.
nobody wants to talk about, though, right? And that's
it's like
why
we could craft the picture of, you know, of a better, yeah. like, a
yeah.
better state for the planet and all the stuff people complain about climate change and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, sure, let's just murder everyone.
Yeah.
Problem solved. It's like we can create
yeah.
this solution where nature thrives again, but, like,
yeah.
at what cost
yeah.
is the question.
And that's just the frustrating part of that whole conversation, though. You know what I mean? It's like they'll always have a hypothetical scenario surrounding any sort of, you know, counter argument that we kind of present to them of why it's still mm-hmm. not needed. And our attention is too much on the conversation, right? Getting back to the dog, where is the dog world going right now? Like, this conversation we're having right now is the epitome of where the dog world is right now, and why it's in such a fucking ridiculous position is because the conversations we're having right now are not the right conversations. It's not the science.
And so that's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
So that makes total sense to me. So basically where we are right now
yeah.
is one camp is looking at where we could or should in their mind be versus the other camp is like, yes, but here's where we are right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's what works right now. If you want your life to look right now like the same in 10 years, if you're happy with how things are right now, you can do it like this. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of that like, who I think it was Michael Ellis that was like, well, the job of a dog trainer is to be idealistic and to be forward thinking and to be optimistic, but also be practical.
Yeah.
Pragmatic. Right?
And so the conversation then should kind of meet in the middle there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I was saying on our podcast that we did together, you know, I was talking about the only conversations between like the force-free community and the balance community have primarily been done through Ivan's podcast that he's done. Mm-hmm. And I think that I even think a lot of those, they've kind of just missed the mark on it because they wind up just talking about sport dogs and they wind up talking about police and military dogs and not the large majority of dog owners out there and their needs, not the needs on the field, not the needs you know, in the context of some sort of working position or anything like that. I think that's why those conversations have been really frustrating to me so far.
Sure. I was listening to the one with Susan Garrett.
Yeah.
And I think that the I think my big frustration in general, whenever people make these statements, you know, trainers or organizations or these cited studies that I'm reading through and all this stuff, is the wordplay game kind of looks like this. Reward-based methods are a more effective method of teaching dogs things, right? We did recalls, we did whatever. And I think that they either accidentally, in terms of science, I'm willing to believe that this is the case, because scientists don't necessarily know much about dog training, even with the people that I'm working with. But I wouldn't say it's malicious. They have their own life as a scientist and they do other things, right? It's not strictly dogs.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there's a level of understanding right now that I don't think there's many people that would say using an aversive or using a punisher of some sort is better at teaching a dog how to sit or come to you than a reward. I think the point is, you know, a correction, a punisher, however you want to phrase it, is an effective way to stop them doing something that they shouldn't be doing. It's not the same as building new behaviors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I noticed that gets conflated a ton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That, you know? I mean, that, or just, you know, when you hit the point, you know, everybody says it's better for teaching behaviors. It's like, okay, cool. But like, we can't deny there's a lot of situations where the dogs know the behaviors. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then what, right? Like when I'm out and about and my dog decides to take off after a squirrel after I've been working recall training for 3 months with them. Yeah. Sure, we could say I didn't manage the situation properly because I put them in a position where they didn't have any sort of backup or this or that. But, like, shit happens. You know what I mean? We, as dog trainers, make mistakes. What do you think the general public is going to do when they're working with their dogs? So having that backup to be able to prevent that and make sure the dog realizes there's still some degree of accountability is just so important. And that I've seen recently some of the force-free community has started then going into, well, you know, when we say you can't use aversives, we mean in intentional use, meaning in emergency situations, you could use them. And I think the example I heard was, the example I heard was like, well, if a dog fight is happening and you need to do something that's physically unpleasant or painful in order to get them to stop fighting with each other, that's then okay. To which then I go for, we should always be training, intentionally training for emergency situations. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying let your dogs get into a dog fight with each other so that you could obviously intentionally use something for that. But a good example would be the emergency situation where your dog's leash accidentally got unclipped and there's a squirrel right there and they're fucking going for them, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't use positive reinforcement in that situation. You can't use management in the form of a long line for it. That emergency situation would require an e-collar in order to stop it, right? Or at least that's one of the ways that you could handle that in that emergency situation. And why would I not want to intentionally go into that situation, quote unquote, setting the dog up to fail so they could at least learn that lesson so all my training then moving forward could be done in a nicer and more positive manner? And I know in the back of my mind, been there, done that in that situation, my dog learned the lesson from that, so it's less likely it's going to happen in the future.
Well, and people, you know, Zach had made this point. It was like last week or so, or his wife made this point. I think she has a degree in like
psychology,
like ethology or something like that. And she made this point that, like, you know, all mammals learn the same.
Yeah.
Right. Like the learning principles sure. apply to all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's stuff like that. And then Zach's there like, yeah, absolutely. And I'm like, it's stuff like that.
Just like that. Yeah,
absolutely. I do a really good. Yeah. It's stuff like that that makes me feel like you're kind of putting your foot in your mouth a little bit, because you turn around and be like, I completely endorse this statement that all mammals yeah. learn the mm-hmm. same. But I don't see you suggesting that we should eliminate like prison and laws mm-hmm. and
yeah.
you know, any sort of averse, you know.
He had, because that was actually one of our clips where we were talking about that, and he mm-hmm. actually commented on it, and he had some sort of rebuttal to why it's okay to use them with like humans and stuff. And I think a lot of it had to do with just because of how society, again, getting back to like, there's always a road sure. to like why sure, something sure, sure. is okay, right? The way society is set up and the legal system is set up protects certain ways that you would learn through positive reinforcement or things like that. So unfortunately,
but it protects it with what?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think it was through like laws and stuff. Like basically like there's not concrete enough consequences.
Exactly. Through consequence. Cause what is a law? A law is something that if you don't abide by, 100%. There is a consequence, right? 100%. And what is a consequence for a misbehavior? I think there's a term for that. Like that's what I'm saying is when you follow these trails, and that one wasn't even that deep. Yeah. It's just like, it's not hard to realize that you don't make sense. Yeah. And that's my problem.
I'm with you. Like we talked about
on your podcast, we've never had, I don't think any of the three of us have issue with an R plus trainer who chooses to be this way for a reason sure. that makes sense. And that's all that I ask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Just stand behind, like however you want to do things is fine. It's like, be undeniable that what you're doing is working, you know, and do your thing and don't worry about what I'm doing. You know, like continue to provide a better, if you think you could do it better, right. Provide a better service and show the world, like what do they say? Like a cream rises to the top or whatever it is. Like I would always say all the time is that, you know, if the force-free dog training approach worked as effectively as it's stated that it works, the game would be monopolized at this point. We would not still be having this, like, trying to ban e-collars and trying to ban tools and protesting individuals at their seminars and stuff. But the fact of the matter is, every one of us, no matter what avenue of dog training we're in, we are all in the same boat as far as the struggles that we face. I would bet my success and failure rate with certain situations is just on par with every single other big name dog trainer that's out there. And all the big failures that I've had are all probably the exact same failures that they've had. And even on the force-free side of things, I think our success rate might be a little bit higher because we're open to more stuff. But a lot of the failures they've experienced are probably pretty in line with failures that we've experienced as well, you know? And we just have to be honest about that. I think that's the problem. And that's why I have a hard time, like, when I see people, like, over-idolize certain trainers, like, forget force-free for a minute, but, like, bigger name dog trainers out there, they really look at them like they have the answer to all of their problems, is because I could guarantee that all of the big problems I've ran into in my experiences owning a company, at least from the standpoint of people that, like, have facilities, right, or just from a training standpoint, I would bet you they've ran into all of those same problems and still run into all of those same problems, whether it's owner compliance issues, whether it's not being able to get far enough with a behavioral issue because there's some sort of genetic limitations or little mistakes they make in handling the dog or caring for the dog or whatever it may be. Like, I guarantee you these people all ran into the same shit. You know, it's just certain trainers talk about it more or less because of the brand that they've created for themselves. And inevitably, what I see is just a lot of the big name dog trainers are not talking about that and making it seem too much like they have the solution for everything.
Can I get your thoughts on this?
Yeah.
Because I know we have to wrap up here
soon. Fine.
You made a really excellent statement, like, you know, that quote, cream rises to the top. I think that's cool. And to someone like Zach George's credit, something he does exceptionally well is market.
Sure.
Like his social media presence is undeniable.
Yeah. Past marketing, one thing I want to also give him credit for is for your average owner that gets a puppy, like his videos are tried and true. You know what I mean? Like, here's how you teach a leave it. Here's how you teach a sit stay. Here's how you teach a down stay. Like, he puts information out there in a very concise and clear way where your average owner can do those things.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was about to say was his level. And me and Brent have talked, like, I've been saying this, I feel like, for years. Like, Zach's level of polish, Zach's level of concise, like, explanative, you know, ability. Yeah. Is awesome. There's a lot of value there. I completely agree. I've had a couple evaluations lately with a couple of dogs I just took on who both we met, and they were like, yeah, I taught my dog these things. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. How'd you do it? And they're like, oh, there's this book of this guy. And they kind of like explain what he looks like. And I'm like, oh, I know who you're talking about, right? Yeah. Like, I can see that he helps people. There's no denying that for sure. But I guess what I wanted to get your thoughts on was not whether or not he's helpful, because I know that he is. Yeah. What I wanted to get your thoughts on was, if Zach George is undeniably really effective at marketing and building a brand, especially with what he's doing lately, right? Going after Dog Daddy and all this stuff, because he's been very popular lately, right? Then the issue is, I don't think like Balance Trainer should do the same thing back. Then it just becomes this argument.
You're talking the going after
do you
thing?
Think, yeah, exactly.
I disagree. So, I think so that's actually starting to kill some of his popularity. I think it's attracting a new type of viewer, right? It's attracting kind of the people that sit on their computer and like to talk shit on people's pages all the time. But you got to look at like that client that you just referenced that learned some things from Zach George's videos. If they were currently looking for, you know, whatever, tips on their puppy and stuff like that, and they stumbled upon Zach George's page, you think they would be into what they're seeing? I don't know. I personally don't think so, right? I think a lot of those followers he has, the 3.6 million, is because the content he was putting out there was relatable to your average dog owner. This content right now he's putting out is not relatable to your average dog owner.
I agree with you, and I see people like pushing back against it too. Like, I've seen people make comments like, can we have dog videos again? but I guess I'll put it this way. Like, he's built a big following, and what he's doing right now is really good at galvanizing like the true believers, right? Yeah. That's like a political game, right? There's things that I'm going to say that are unpopular to half of it, but the other half are going to love it, right? And I'm kind of playing to my audience, so to speak. So what I'm getting at is, I don't think it's smart for Balance Trainers to return the favor. I think that's stupid. I think it just makes it this whole argument, right? Now we're just in human politics.
Right.
So what I want to get your thoughts on is, does this ultimately sound like the next move? As Zach does this thing, and it's working for him, undeniably, is the balanced counter move, trainers start making more just like end result videos. Just straight up before and afters. Like, I get it, Zach. You think I'm terrible. You think I'm this and that. Here, do this.
Well, I think one thing I've heard, I think Larry said this recently. He said a lot of problems would be solved if people started posting their, I think it was like 6 month, 1 year, and 5 year update on the clients that they work with. It was something along those lines, right? And basically what he was getting at was, is your shit really working, right? Like, are your clients really happy, right? And that's where you get back to things going from like, okay, we've got these extremes have gotten so far apart at this point, but what was dog training when it felt a little bit more normal? Dog training was when people focused on their dog training business, and they didn't focus on the fucking internet so much. And again, we're all guilty of it. Like, we put shit out there on the internet because we want to build a bigger and bigger name for ourselves. But the fact of the matter is, across all my platforms, I've got, what, you know, 70,000 followers, something like that. How many of those followers are actually local potential clients?
None. Yeah, that's
exactly
my
point.
Very few of them.
You know what I mean?
I'm so glad.
Very few of those people are actually people that will ever be benefited from my business. They're just people that are here for the sheer entertainment of the content that we put out, and people don't realize that, right? So if we could focus on just our business, right? And that's the one thing I've really, really, really tried to
What's
do.
What's that old saying? It's they say, mind your business.
Mind your business.
Mind your business.
Listen, like, I'm okay with a little friendly debate. Like, I'm a little rough around the edges, and I like, you know, I like talking some shit every now and then. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, again, we're all guilty of that kind of stuff. But I really, really try to focus on my business. And that's why I highlight when I talk to people, yo, forget the internet for a minute. Boom, go look at our freaking Google reviews, right? Go watch our videos and see the things that our clients say online about us. Look at our relationships that we have with people within the community here. Like, we've got a great relationship with our local shelters and rescues and this and that. And it's because they believe in us because they like the work that we're doing. You know what I mean? And that has nothing to do with the fucking internet.
Yeah, the internet kind of becomes its own social media reality television show that everyone can be a part of. And, you know, they get to feel like a fucking Kardashian or like a Vanderpump, and they get to feel part of this drama that at the surface level, it has zero depth to it. Right. And I've always been and again, you're kinfolk, and so it's like me and Mariano individually, we've always just focused on our community, our staff, our businesses as much as possible. And that's why you'll never see shade really being thrown out from the DTP podcast. Like we don't get stuck into that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because we might post something once every week because it's something that's meaningful or something that's important or something that we feel is adding value to the dog training community versus just playing in the soap opera. You know what I mean? And it's like having this opportunity to interview dog trainers like yourself and getting to learn and continue to be students and bringing that information back to our communities to be able to help those people that are within hand's reach, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where my head is. So I guess going back to that question. So like what role do dog trainers play? Like we have a dog training podcast, like the people listening to this, what are some of those steps? I think you just mentioned a couple, but those steps to move forward, to be able to make the changes that need to be made in the dog training industry.
Some of these I think are going to kind of be related to that. Some of them might be a little off topic, whatever. I got three things, right? So one, total transparency. So give more of the full picture in ways you can. Obviously, you got to market yourself. You got to draw in clients. Mm-hmm. You don't want to always only just highlight bad things and this and that. But be more open with people about what training looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I lost my thing number two already, but I'll come back to it. Thing number three that I had was I think that, be very, very careful about vilifying people past just disagreeing with methods, because you never know whether this arrow is going to get shifted to next, right? Mm-hmm. I was seeing, you know, when a lot of, you know, like when we had Dog Daddy back on our podcast, and I think there's speculation Ivan had him on the podcast and things like that, where, and I'm almost positive.
There's speculation?
Well, yeah. So Dog Daddy posted a screenshot of a Zoom call with Ivan in it and him in it, and then made a post saying, I was just on Ivan Blabanoff's podcast. It's going to be coming out. And it looks like it's actually going to happen. Whatever. That'll be very interesting. I'm very curious to hear what the hell they talked about.
That's going to be a tough one.
I was reading the comment section about it, right? And I was seeing trainers, people with really, really big followings. Again, I'm trying not to like name drop too much here or anything like that. But people with really big followings that were basically saying, this is absolutely absurd that Ivan would have him on the podcast. This individual needs to be shut down to the point where nobody could have a, he's not able to communicate with anybody or get his message out there or this or that. And it was just like, first off, you don't even know what the hell they talked about. It could have been Ivan ripping this dude to shreds for 3 hours long. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But past that, right? Like we all are currently right now pointing the arrow in that direction as far as like, oh yeah, we got to go after him because he's a bad example of balanced dog training, or the Force Free community is pointing the arrow at him of like, oh, he's the worst example of dog training, right? So we need to go after it. But like, if he falls that has 3.6 million followers, right, and is the biggest name right now, at least when you look at the sheer numbers of things, right, where the fuck do you think that arrow is going to get pointed next? It's going to come down the ladder a little bit, right? And then if that person falls, because they're going to have peanuts in comparison to followers as far as he does, right? It's going to get pointed to one down next, and it's going to keep shifting down that direction, right? And I think this – go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. That was the majority of what
that's exactly why I care.
Yeah.
I guess exactly. I can say. Because I completely agree with you guys. Like, we have real life stuff to do.
Yeah.
We have real dogs here to train. It's not about bickering online. I get that, right? And I think that evidence proves that. Like, I've never really cared about much of anything. It's just now the problem is, you're right. If that arrow gets pointed somewhere after Dog Daddy, then is it just online bullshit anymore? Or is it like, this is my real life and my real business and fake one-star review? You know, that's where I got put on notice. Like, okay, so this isn't just someone complaining online.
Yes.
This is an actual real-world problem. And anybody would be naive to make one of two mistakes. You'd be naive to dive too far into it. I respect that. I get that, right? We have real shit going on. But you'd also be naive to pretend like it doesn't matter, because it does. Yeah. It just does, right?
100%, right? And I think the other big thing is on piggybacking off of that same point, I think is balanced dog trainers. I see a lot of balanced dog trainers right now that just really are almost just as guilty of pointing the arrow towards other balanced dog trainers, making it seem like everything they're doing is so bad, You know what I mean? And it's past just disagreeing about methods. It's you know, really attacking character and stuff like that, right? Over just disagreements about methods. And I really think that, again, we could disagree, but I think we got to cool it a little bit with that, because at a certain point, the force-free community doesn't have a very hard time all banding together, because there's not a whole lot of disagreement amongst what they're doing, because it's all based on the science. They have their ultimate head person, which is what
they have, their Bible,
and all that kind of stuff, where we don't really have that, right? We kind of look at, I feel like from the balanced training community, we look at it as more of an art. Everybody's got their spin on it. There's a lot more nuances and variables than the other side makes it seem, where at a certain point, I think we're all going to have to kind of band together a little bit, no matter how much we might disagree with people. So that people like, you know, like, we'll look at two extremes of the spectrum of somebody like, you know, Jeff Gelman and the freaking dog daddy, or, you know, Ivan and Larry and Robert Cabral, or people with really big names who are at polar opposite ends of the spectrum as far as what balance training is. You're all going to have to kind of just like shake hands and be like, all right, agree to disagree, you know, but we got bigger fish to fry right now. I think it's going to be a very important thing that needs to happen. And, I would really like to see a lot of the big names start to, I don't want to say band together, but like become a little bit more friendly with each other.
Just present a unified front.
Yeah, unified front.
Yeah, cool. Like, I have this image
the
of
allied
like,
power, access, or allied
powers. Yeah, but it's almost like a Renaissance thing where it's like, well, we have Michelangelo, and we have Leonardo da Vinci, and we have, you know, and it's like, and everybody's very different, and I'm sure that there were things that they all disagreed on.
Describe a bunch of Ninja Turtles? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And didn't it used to be Raphael like that? Like, this was before my time in dog training, but I remember, like, Tyler telling me stories about how, like, Jeff and Sean and Larry and Tyler and Blake and Michael and, like, all these people, like, that's when the, like, the IACP first formed, and they would all get together, and, like, they're not, none of them are doing anything dramatically different than they were when that was happening. It's just at this point, they've all like started just fucking bickering with each other. And I think it really has to do with just how popular all of them have individually gotten, where they start just attacking each other over shit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So no, I think we got to get back to that a little bit, you know?
Well, and I think that's what's happening in our generation of dog trainers. And maybe in 20 years, we'll hate each other. Who knows?
Yeah. Right.
But I think that's happening, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just a social media thing in general, because again, look at people, look at anything that has nothing to do with dogs, you know, so I think it's just an echo chamber thing, period.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with personal issues, personal stories, the way individuals treated each other, you know, it's always the internal and interpersonal relationships that affect the lens of their dog training, right? And that's fair. If someone mistreated me, I'm not gonna give two shits about their dog training. You know what I mean? So it is what
it's
it is.
We just gotta move past some of that. We could still harbor our same feelings. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but like publicly, I think we could tone it back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I think that you've presented some really simple solutions. Like the first one is relax on going after each other and playing the look at me, I'm not as bad as them game.
Yeah.
Because ultimately to them,
we're just as bad.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a big,
like at the end of the day, you're right.
Point. I am just as bad as all of them. You know what I mean?
That's ultimately part of why I care so much too. Cause it's like, I'm not a big fan of what I see from the dog daddy either.
Sure.
You know, but to them it doesn't matter.
It's
and people tend to pretend like, no, they're gonna be cool with me. Cause I'm like really ethical and I take my time and I do low level stim and I do this and that. And it's like, they don't care.
I heard it firsthand.
Right? Like I'm just not gonna,
I heard it firsthand in one of Zach's lives where somebody was asking about different trainers and somebody brought up like Michael Ellis's name in the same conversation they were having about Dog Daddy. And Zach could not say one good thing about Michael Ellis. He couldn't.
About
just
Michael
due to his
Ellis.
Morals. Just due to his morals.
Wow.
He could not say one good thing. He said, yeah, well, he's still using the same problematic methods. And it's like, no, I mean, those are very, that's very different.
You're like,
right?
Sorry, he's probably,
but to them,
he's probably a better
it's the same
trainer.
Thing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
But that was my point though. It was like, you presented a very simple, like two simple solutions. The first one was stop bickering. Right. And the second one was just show it.
Focus on
ultimately,
your business more. Yeah. I think that was the second thing that I lost was like, we've got to start focusing on our business more. You know what I mean? Focus on the work you're doing and have
and if
that
it's not
always
a business, at least
first.
your personal reputation. Focus on your craft, your clients, the things that are within hand's reach. Because to be honest, like I can count on both hands how many clients I've gotten off the internet, like social media, internet, right? Like,
well, that I would disagree with a little bit because social media
but that's
been
different.
Very, very impactful for
the
for
only
our
thing
business.
That we've done legitimately, like consistently, is the podcast, right? So
okay, I understand.
At my current testimony, that makes sense. My in-person reach, my community, my 15 years of referrals, those things have provided me 90% of my business versus the internet, just a handful, you know? Yeah.
Right, but we know that it's powerful because there are people who gain a huge percentage of their clients strictly from social media. Like, I think of like Jonas, who does...
Jonas Black,
who does like tours in other cities and stuff, and it's like he doesn't have a business front there. There is no local word of mouth there.
Yeah,
it's he posts, "I'm going to be there in October," and hit me up here, and people do it, and he makes money. So yeah, I agree. Like, social media became this weird monster, not just in dog training, where if you can utilize it effectively, it's great for you. Mm-hmm. The problem is most people can't or don't care to learn or don't think they have a problem or whatever.
Yeah,
and so it just kind of encompasses and creates this tribal fight. You know what I mean? And that's that weird thing where it's like...
And you're also putting yourself out there to get judged. So you run the risk of getting thrown into the nonsense, you know?
Yeah. No, which I understand, right? And it's like we all know that, but we all do it because ultimately it's worth it. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it, right? Because we gain more than we lose, basically. 100%. And that's life 101, is nothing is perfect, right? So ultimately, the decision is still, let's do it this way, not that way. Mm-hmm. You know, the turning point was... Now it's getting real, like event spaces that have nothing to do with dog training, getting one-star reviews type real. You know what I'm saying? That's where it's like, you guys, you need to chill. Like, let's take a step backwards back into just dog training. That's a good step one, right? And then steps two and three are like, stop fighting amongst each other because they don't give a shit. You're creating differences that don't matter to them. Mm-hmm. And then number two is show your work then.
Mm-hmm.
Period, point blank, right?
I like it.
100%. I agree with that. So just to sign off real quick, David, are there any projects you have coming up? Anything you'd like to share with our audience? Anything that you, and announcements?
Not really. I mean,
that's fair. That's fair.
Like, listen, like we, getting back to like kind of trying to stick by what I say, like we always got we have the magnifying glass on the company, like at all times. You know what I mean? So there are a lot of things I constantly have in the works as far as, you know, just operational things at the facility and you know, growing and shrinking based on the demand, because obviously it's always fluctuating, and, you know, inner staff things and all that kind of stuff. So, no, like that really is a lot of my focus. Like, from the very, very get-go, when I started Miracle Canine and went from like my last company that I owned with a partner, Heights Canine, to starting Miracle Canine Training, I told myself that I didn't want to do anything else until I squeezed absolutely everything that I could out of this singular location. And year after year after year so far, we've seen significant growth in the company. And it's still growing, and I'm still squeezing more out of it, right? So that's really what I got focused on right now. And all this social media stuff comes second. Like, I do all the comments and stuff on it, but like, I don't post anything. Like, we got a media staff that edits all our YouTube videos, posts everything on all our social media platforms and stuff like that. So though it seems like we're very active on there, like, that is very little to do with me. Right. So that's really the biggest thing. I would say that I got last month, I got named here, little kind of flex, we'll call it. I got named the local Forbes did like a local 30 under 30 thing.
Oh, nice.
And I got nominated and won the Forbes 30 under 30.
That's great, man.
It was really, really cool, actually. So that has kind of come with getting a lot of local attention amongst different, entrepreneurial organizations and stuff like that. I've been asked to be on like a ton of different podcasts. Like, I was just, you know, we did this one. I was on like a local podcast called Lay of the Land that's going to be coming out soon. Jeff Gelman actually just had me the other day on his morning show, which I think comes out sometime this week. Yeah, he had me on that, which was a really, really awesome conversation, actually. That was... You know, I mean, we can go for 4 hours talking, obviously, but that it was a great conversation. Sure. And I got a couple more, two more this week that I'm actually doing.
Hell
so
yeah, man.
Just a bunch of stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's just kind of cool to get a little bit of notoriety, you know, through all this. Like, we catch a lot of flack just as much as everybody else on the internet for, you know, shit we post, what we do, all that kind of stuff. And it's cool to see from a local level, if you really look at it, like we're growing a monster business over here. It's really cool.
That's awesome.
So that's what I got going on right now.
No, congratulations on that. And I think that serves as inspiration for a lot of people listening, right? Yeah. Like, one of our three main goals in this podcast is education, inspiration, and collaboration, right, man?
Hell yeah.
And I think you've done a hell of a job helping us, you know, check all those boxes today. So I really, really appreciate you having on. Yeah, man, we hope to have you back soon. Actually, I'm in my brain, I'm thinking of a panel for...
Dude, that's so funny you said that, because I was just thinking about... I've never done one of these like three-way Zoom calls or anything like this before. I was like, damn, I was like, this would be cool if we got like a bunch of fucking people on it. Did like like 5-hour long podcast or some shit. I think that would be awesome.
Well, we'll talk to you kind of off camera and off the record a little bit, but I have a couple service ideas for our listeners that I'd like to talk to you about. Similar, having to do with mentorship kind of concept. So,
yeah.
All right, guys, time to sign off. We really appreciate you guys. This is our interview with David Terpek, of David the Dog Trainers podcast, and also owner of Miracle Canine. You guys can find him online. What's the handle? It's at Miracle Canine.
Everything is at Miracle Canine Training, or the David the Dog Trainer podcast is on every podcasting platform out there.
Every platform that you guys can find him. Go ahead and check him out if you guys don't know who he is already. And we really appreciate you being on, David. Thank you again. My name is Brent Labrada. That guy's Mariano Alvarez, and we'll see you guys on the next time. Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.